Oh, fuck yeah, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, fuck yeah. So we're doing this place on the 22nd and the 23rd. We're working together two nights in a row, Brian Callen.
Yes.
That's what's happening.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, can you believe this? I get to work with one of my best friends on the planet Earth, Brian motherfucking Callen.
Brian the Kid.
September 22nd and 23rd.
Yeah, 22nd will be at the Ice House.
I hate saying one of my best friends because I don't want to be mean to my other best friends.
Is that what it is?
But you're my favorite.
I'm kind of your favorite.
Shh.
Guys, at the end of the day...
What the fuck, Joe Rogan?
At the end of the
Where
day...
Where am I? What do I fit in your fucking program? My number three, cocksucker?
Now, I'm very easy to hang out with for you. It's just, it's no
but
work.
We're both retarded.
Yeah.
That's
we speak each other's language.
That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
We understand.
The 23rd, you guys,
Hong Yeah, we're doing Kong the Ventura, in Ventura, California.
Yeah, we're doing two shows now. We just added an 8 o'clock.
Well, we
sold
out
at 10
o'clock. It's not for sale yet, but it will be for sale soon.
Yeah.
And
so
then,
it's going to be 8 o'clock and a 10 o'clock show.
Yeah, and Tuesday, we're doing something. It's like a showcase at the Ice House. Just me and Callen on Tuesday
Damn.
Night, the 22nd.
22nd on the 23rd. The 22nd Ice House. 23rd Hong Kong
oh my
Inn.
God.
Two shows.
So
8 and 10.
Oh, if we just had a hunting trip in with that, it might be the perfect week.
We need to go hunting again.
Yeah.
And it's not even about the animals. It's just an opportunity for me to be a silly goose and have you captive. 5 days.
Well, one of our favorite trips was the one in Alaska, which was the most miserable. But Ranella had a really fucking good point about that trip. And he was talking about things that are fun. He's like, there's things that are fun while you're doing them, and then they're not fun afterwards.
Yeah.
But there's things that are not fun while you're doing them, and they become really fun after you've done them.
Such an interesting point.
Yeah, it's one of his buddies has this scale of fun.
Yeah.
It's like, and the cheapest, easiest fun is like roller coaster rides. But nobody looks back on a roller coaster ride and goes, man, that time I went down a fucking roller coaster,
yeah.
man. Yeah, we did that roller coaster. Dude, we went up, we went down with all those other people strapped to our seat.
No. You need an element of suffering. You need to be shivering in the morning and wet. And I think, because they've done some studies on what happens when you're in those situations, you create, anxiety actually creates oxytocin. And oxytocin is a bonding chemical. So when you're going through the shit, when it's raining and you're cold and you're like, fuck, man, this is going to suck. We got to go find a deer. It's actually a bonding experience. And what happens is when you think back on it, like, what are you going to do when you're sitting there freezing in the rain? You're going to make each other laugh. It's just silliness. What else are you going to do? And I think
Well, with you and I. But you and I have a good attitude for that stuff. We can both just accept the fact that we're in a bad environment. There's some people that just can't accept it and they freak out.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you can't bring with you.
I can't bring those people with me.
Yeah. But even those people, I always submit that a lot of that is like how you've always approached bad situations. Like how have you learned?
Well, I would say it's also a factor, a fact that they are thinking about the wrong things. So they always say mental strength is more about what you choose not to think about in shitty circumstances. Like Tim Kennedy was telling a really funny story about when he was doing Ranger, because I asked him, I said, what drives you? Like, how are you so tough? What do you think it is? And he said, I don't know, man. He said, I was Ranger training and it was so cold. I was lying on the ground and we were waiting for a simulated ambush. And my dick was hitting like a woodpecker. I was shivering. My body was shivering like that. And some dude just got up and went down the road and said, I quit. I give up. I'm done. And Tim is sitting there freezing and he goes, that dude is so fucking smart. He's so much smarter than I am. Here I am in this shit. And that guy is smart enough to be like, fuck it. I don't want to do this anymore. And he just says, I was just too stubborn to quit. Now, I'm more impressed with Tim than I am with that guy.
Depends on what the guy did. If he left and started some global powerhouse of a company like, you know, Tesla Motors or something like that, and went on to make $1 billion in the next 2 years, I would say, yeah, that guy probably did the right thing.
That's why it's really important for a society to be structured in such a way that you allow people to do what they're meant to do. If you're in Russia, the guy with the biggest guns and the biggest muscles, that's the guy that runs everything. But how much innovation comes out of Russia? When was the last time you bought a Russian computer, or a Russian car, or a Russian anything?
It's a very good point.
Yeah.
Because they make good fighters.
They make good fighters, and they're very
they make
tough.
Good hoes.
Very macho culture.
How
women like
hoes?
Aggressive men. The hoes are fantastic.
They're on point.
They are on point. And I was 17, and I had my experience with two of them in the Cosmos Hotel.
Really? In Russia?
I sure did.
17?
Svetlana and Kristina.
Where'd you get the money?
I didn't give them money, but I did give them my Nike shoes and my blue jeans. And my blue jeans, because there was a guy there. Yeah.
So this is before this we sorted out the Cold War?
1985.
So it was still danger.
Uh-huh. I was 18, 17.
You barely could get over there, right? I mean, you can get over there, but they looked at you funny.
You had a government monitor.
You had a government monitor.
Yep. They would bug your hotel room to make sure you weren't, you know, CIA or whatever.
So did you walk around your hotel room going, oh, fuck, yeah.
I'm coming.
Oh, I'm coming again.
Oh, communism. Where's communist era turns
come
me on.
All day. We follow him. Look at transcript. Look, all the time come.
Look, American
look,
dick.
He's come here. He's come there. He come bathroom. He come balcony. Every, he come television.
Everywhere.
On bed.
Everywhere.
Who clean? Not me.
He's young. He's 17. His dick never go down. Always.
You know what Mike Swick told me? Mike Swick used to work for some government agency. I forget what it was. I want to say Secret Service. But they were in Moscow, and they discovered these listening devices that the Russians had placed in their buildings. And they were so sophisticated that they were powered by the movement of the building. Because every building has subtle movement.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you've ever been in a building that is in an earthquake, it's a very weird feeling. Because you feel the building, like, rocking back and forth, and it's disconcerting, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, this thing fucking moves, man. But there's a constant moving and swaying with the wind, and it's very minute. And sometimes you can feel it, like it's a heavy storm, but most of the time you can't.
Mm.
Well, the Russians had figured out how to make some piece of sound equipment power by that. So it had no external power source. It was completely powered by the movement of the building.
And so the device would turn on.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So if somebody was walking, it would turn on.
Well, so I don't know the specifics, but I know that it was a very sophisticated device that was powered by the movement of the building.
Mm.
I think a lot of those are voice activated, but I used to have a voice activated tape recorder, and at one point in time I was trying to hook it up to the tank, my isolation tank, so that when I'm in the tank and I have a great idea, I could just say it and it record it, but I just didn't use it. Because the ideas were just coming at you. Like, when you're in the tank, the ideas are just coming at you like wet fish.
Yeah, I know.
Try to catch them. Try to hold on to one, but they're really hard to do.
In that tank, I try to have no thoughts. That's hard to do.
But this guy, Swick, when Swick was telling me these guys, whoever had set this equipment up in there, they were using sophisticated equipment that the U.S. government didn't even know existed.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It's always been a technological race. We were far ahead of them in the Cold War. Just because we could outsource
it. Not with rocketry. Not with the space program. The space program, like, you're always going to have problems whenever there's a country where people don't have the motivation to succeed and achieve because they don't get financially rewarded or they're constrained by that sort of, they have this sort of imperialistic Russian sort of economy. It's it's a very different way of achieving success. You achieve success if you get in with the right group of people and you have to play the right politics.
Yeah, it's an economy of influence.
You can't just be some fucking nomad, some rogue investor who goes out and kicks ass and makes a lot of money. They take those guys and they take their money and they lock them up in jail.
That's right.
I mean, Putin has done that to many of these oligarch billionaire characters in these terrifying stories.
Well, the mistake that they made, a lot of those guys made, was going into politics and criticizing the government.
Yes.
Putin had sort of an unwritten law that said, you can make your money. You're going to pay us a little something, but you can make your money. You start making noise about politics, and that's what they did to, what's his name, the guy who owned Yukos Oil, I think it's called, the biggest oil magnate, and they stormed his plane. And I think he's still in jail.
No, they let him out.
Yeah.
They let him out, but I think it's the same guy you're talking about.
It took all his...
it was a very famous case.
Yeah.
Took everything.
When you have a government like that, when you don't have property rights, when you don't have due process, when you don't have objective law, what happens is, who in the world is going to work really hard to create a company when the guy with the biggest guns can come along and take it?
Yeah.
Again, I'd love to sit Putin down and ask him how he thinks that strategy makes any sense.
He's not thinking that it makes sense. He's thinking that he can do it.
Yeah, it's a very short-sighted thing that ironically makes your country way weaker. It lowers your your life expectancy and everything. Russia's a one crop economy, oil. And now that oil's at $40 a barrel when it was at 100, they're having a major crisis.
Do you think that is a part of the U.S. strategy to fuck with them?
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not.
So you don't think the U.S. government has any control whatsoever on the amount of the price of oil?
Absolutely not.
I mean, is it possible?
Russia's biggest problem is that their history has either given rise to czars, kings, or a different kind of czar, which is the communist dictator. You know, the Russians are a very industrious people, and you know, you wonder what they would be capable of doing if they lived in a society where the incentive structure rewarded you for your work and your ingenuity.
Right.
But unfortunately, they have always lived under some kind of an autocracy, some kind of oligarchy. It's never been different. I mean, Putin is essentially a czar, and he has his small group of people around him. So I believe that it has nothing to do with the United States. In fact, it has everything to do with a philosophy.
That's not what I meant, though, honestly. Yeah. I agree with you on all that, but what I meant is the price of oil. Do you think it's manipulated to fuck with events?
I don't think it's possible. Oil's a worldwide economy, a commodity. And so when it's traded on the worldwide commodity, nobody's controlling oil. Oil is out there and traded.
Right. How's it go? Do you know how it goes up and down? Like when oil goes from $40 a barrel, $100 a barrel, how does it do that?
I don't know the intricacies of that, but I do know that one of the reasons it went from $100 to $40 a barrel was fracking in this country, where we had our own access to massive oil shales.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It's
that's
incredible.
Changed
it's changed
right?
everything. And all of a sudden, we're no longer dependent on Russian oil. Other people aren't as dependent on Russian oil. They can buy our oil for cheaper. Or there's just a glut. There's just more oil. And when there's more oil being traded on the world stage, the price will come down. There is not a scarcity of oil. I mean, in fact, oil now in 2015, I think, is now, the price of gas is ridiculously cheap because it's nobody expected this kind of technology to create that much oil that quickly.
What, you know, fracking, though, seems like, no matter what anybody says, I mean, there's going to be debate. Anytime there's anything controversial, anytime that there's any sort of environmental risk with something like that, it's hard to separate the facts from the noise.
Yes.
But it seems without a doubt that some areas are getting contaminated. It seems without a doubt that some rivers are getting polluted, some well systems are getting fucked up. That movie Gasland got criticized for some inaccuracies, but they couldn't criticize all of it. You know, there's some undeniable aspects to fracking. And
there's
also
some undeniable
potential
aspects to any kind of energy technology, mm-hmm. because the fact of the matter is civilization and feeding the civilization an energy source is going to be, at this point, polluting. And I think the way out of it is you know, a lot of people favor legislation, and I think there might be a place for legislation, of course. But I think what's really going to get us out of that kind of an issue is technology, is just create more incentives. I don't care if it's through the government or, you know, government grants or private enterprise. Create incentives for smart people to come up with clean technology. And that's what we're doing. You know, that's kind of where you want to head.
Yeah, it's not like there's going to be some sort of an instant solution for the pollution of the atmosphere or the ocean. But it seems like with people are really fucking smart. There's these giant leaps that they make every now and then, and a lot of them are due to pressure. And there's some real pressure where people are worried 100%. About the environment.
100%.
And there's going to be people way smarter than us that are going to figure some ways around it. Like, did you hear about that 19-year-old kid came up with a device to clean all the plastic out of the ocean?
No.
Yeah, he won some prize for it. Jamie, see if you can find that. It's like some gigantic fucking skimmer that's going to go over the Pacific garbage patch, and
really?
It sucks the plastic out, and I think it puts it to use. See, the thing about, like, plastic is if you could actually get it out of the ocean, it's valuable. It has a value.
Well, there's more. What is that? They did something. There's an island of plastic the size of the continental United States or something.
It's not
crazy.
Quite that big, but it's like, it's not necessarily an island either. Like, I've described it as an island, and people have corrected me. What it is like soup.
Yes.
It's like there's where the wind.
Tiny pieces.
Yeah. They're very small. They're very small. And that's where the tide has, you know, there's areas where there's like the currents, they put things into like a circulation,
yeah.
and then it'll all accumulate in this one area. But it's like
I think that any problem has a solution.
Shit.
I actually really, as I get older, I'm way less cynical. I think
here it is right here. Ocean cleanup. So this guy's figured out some way, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie. Is this the same one where there's a 19-year-old kid who created this?
Damn,
I didn't see anything about his
this
age.
Might be a different thing because I never saw this part before.
I re-googled the story from like 2013 when it was going around. I just researched the new name to find up some updated stories on it.
Oh, so this is the update?
Yeah, this is their actual website.
The largest cleanup in history. So they're gonna create some gigantic, huge machine. It's probably gonna create a lot of jobs, and they're gonna suck all that fucking plastic out of the ocean. The real problem, too, is not just the plastic in the ocean, but overfishing.
Yeah.
We kill a lot of fucking fish. You know, but I wonder, though, if there's a way. I mean, they have hatcheries. I wonder if there's a way for us to create hatcheries that release fish into the wild. Because we have hatcheries that release salmon. We do it with salmon, and we do it with trout. You know, there's places where you fish for trout, and the fish all come from hatcheries, and they stock the fish.
Well, the problem is the dead zones, the ecological dead zones in the bottom of the ocean, where the trawlers, where they drag for shellfish and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They drag these giant sort of claws that collect everything the size of semis, and they just do that through. And there are areas in the Atlantic that are massive dead zones. There's some crazy amount, like areas the size of Western Europe that are literally dead zones.
Yeah, there's no fucking plants growing down
coral
there. There's no oxygen.
Yeah,
coral gets devastated. Yeah, but I had linguine with clams last night. It was delicious. I'm not going to go pick those fucking clams. Who's going to get me clams?
We'll figure
it out.
The
kid that did it, it's him.
Look at this.
Same kid. Boy
same
on
guy.
What a cool name. Boy on Slat.
Yeah. Wow. He sounds like a wizard. He's a Dutch entrepreneur. Dutch. High as fuck. Guaranteed. Entrepreneur and inventor. This kid, this is a guy to get on the podcast now before he becomes too big.
Wow.
You need to find him. Find him, Jamie. Make a note. Make a mental note. Call Matt Staggs. Find this young man. We'll fly him out from Holland. Tell him we have weed. Let him know. He's only 19. We could corrupt him. Take him around Brian Redband's girls.
Exactly.
Just bring
that's
him to,
kryptonite for any
bring
genius.
Bring him to dirty places. Yeah, we had Alex Honnold on, who's this like one of the best free climbers in the world.
Freak.
Yeah.
He is the best, isn't he? I mean, he does it without ropes.
Yeah, he does. He does it with ropes first to map out his course. Uh-huh. You know, obviously, you have to make sure that you can do it without ropes.
Yeah.
So you got to do it with ropes first. But then he just makes a decision, knows what he can do and what he can't do. Anyway, he was like real mellow and like steady until Brian brought up girls and porn stars that he knows. He's like, what? Really? Because we're inviting
it's
him
too
to
much
go to,
for him.
We were inviting him to go to Vegas. There was a UFC in Vegas and we were doing a show out there and the guy's eyes lit up like,
yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're not getting any pussy on that mountain.
Dude, pussy is like the most pussy's kryptonite for anybody.
There
are women that can change your whole life.
What's that man's name again? That young fella? Bryant?
Boyan Slat.
Boyan Slat. I guarantee you, there's some girls out there that are reading the same thing, especially the dirty girls that listen to this podcast. They're going to find him.
They want
they're
the young
find
genius,
him,
the young Dutch genius.
Suck money out of his dick.
He's probably super tall, girls. Super tall and thin.
Doesn't matter if he is.
The tallest men in Europe.
He could buy you a Bentley. Just suck it out of his dick. You could literally suck a Bentley out of his dick. You just have to suck hard enough and just gently work the balls.
He just starts reaching into
him.
His pocket?
Yes, just be magical to him.
Yeah.
Be a magical nymph who
very
came
easy.
Out of nowhere, just came out of the woods. And get a trap phone, all right? All those guys that are sending you dick pictures, don't give that number to, what's his name again? Boyan? Give it to
Slat.
It's kind of funny that he's something that involves water and he's kind of buoyant.
Yeah.
You know?
Boyan.
Yeah, that's all we need, man.
Just one girl
with a fucking an iPhone with no contacts on it.
Yeah,
she's only getting messages
and then
from boy.
Extort him for money.
Hide her. She could just leave that phone laying around. Never has to worry about getting in trouble because it's just dicks vibrating. Dicks. Get some Russian gal that maybe you met when you were 17 and stole your sneakers.
Ooh.
Get her. Get her to find Boyan. I bet Putin would fucking send his attackers. He's probably got little trained piranha women that he's trained over there.
I guarantee he does.
That they all bang. Everybody in the fucking cabinet or whatever they have, parliament.
There's a lot of fucking that
kingdom.
Goes on in the parliament.
Of
a lot
course.
Of anonymous fucking with masks.
Well, that's one of the reasons why Star Wars is so ridiculous, okay? Because Darth Vader had no motivation. Darth Vader wasn't getting any pussy, okay?
No.
He was just being evil.
Yeah.
There was no money. He wasn't like rolling around in money.
Well, domination of the universe, right?
For what? For what? To wear that stupid mask? Come on, what are you going to do? You can't even exist without that stupid helmet on, and you're going to dominate the universe, and then what? You win? You're already winning. And when you're around, you could choke them without even using your hands. You could fake choke them from a distance and kill them. What do you want?
But
you
wonder about people like Genghis Khan and what motivated him.
It pussy. Was
it pussy and booty?
Pussy. Do you know how much pussy that guy had?
Yeah.
Do
you know what the numbers are? 500 male Chinese men
Asian.
Are directly,
yes.
directly related to.
Directly. Yeah. He changed the fucking ecosystem.
It's crazy.
Dude, there was a New York Times article that said that he killed so many people, something around 10% of the world's population died while he was alive directly because of his decisions.
Yeah.
It was so different.
The biggest asshole on the planet.
Or a great guy who was misunderstood, who's killing a lot of assholes. I bet everybody back then was an asshole. You're dealing with 1200 AD, fucking kill them all.
Yeah.
What do they know? Yeah. They're all apes.
Well, when Dan Carlin says, you have to wonder what the strength of his nature was to wake up and say, I want the world. I want that which I can't even see. He got a scouting guy came back and said, look, there are people with blonde hair and blue eyes in what was Russia. And they said, we should go get those too. And he was like, let's go take them over too.
Well, not only that, they were willing to go through so much hardship. They crossed into Moscow in the winter.
Yes.
Because there was
nobody
this marshy
that.
Area that you could only cross through in the winter when it was frozen solid. But no one ever thought that anybody would do that because it was so harsh. The climate's so harsh.
Right.
The Mongols didn't give a fuck. They never washed their clothes. They ate rats. They ate each other occasionally.
Yeah.
They'd run out of food. That's disputed, apparently, according to Dan Carlin.
They would drink their mare's milk and blood.
Yeah,
and
they would cut their horses and then fill their glass with horse and mare's blood, and that's what they would survive on for days at a time.
Yeah,
they were just so fucking crazy.
I think life in the Gobi Desert on the steppe was already so insanely harsh.
Insanely harsh.
And you were primarily a carnivore. The way they would hunt and catch birds and catch, you know, the deer and the whatever was there with their horses. It was just a very harsh, harsh way to live.
Well, there's a reality to people that you could always take more. You know, most of the time, up until the point where it kills you, you could take more.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching Ranella, Meat Eater, the other day. He had an episode on, I don't want to say the name wrong, Nanuvak Island outside of Alaska. You can get to it when the fucking ocean freezes.
Yeah, no,
you can walk there.
I'm not doing that hunting trip.
They take jet skis across the frozen ocean.
Damn.
Okay? And these people are out there and they hunt for this thing called a muskox, which is this enormous beast of an animal, which I may go hunting in Greenland with Cam Haynes. We might do an archery muskox hunt because apparently you can hunt them in the dry green. You don't have to be an asshole and be out there in the middle of
my
the fucking snow.
My dentist almost died hunting for muskox.
They apparently taste delicious.
Yeah.
They taste like ribeye steak. It's like a just incredibly delicious, big fat animal because they're just constantly eating to try to keep fat on to keep them warm.
Yeah.
And they're ridiculously cool looking, and there's a lot of them.
So are there a lot of them?
Yeah, in Greenland, apparently there are.
Wow.
Yeah. In Greenland, they thrive more.
So you can go hunting for them in the grass where it's not that
exactly.
cold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where you're doing it in the Arctic, if you're doing it in Alaska, you're hunting for them on these frozen tundras. It's crazy to watch.
Sam Sheridan was telling me that they went to rescue, I think they were hunting muskox, but they went to rescue these guys who had been out on a hunt, and they were so cold, they were already dying of
frostbite,
hypothermia, and when they got there, they were taking all their clothes off. Because what happens,
you
blood rushes to your, you think you're burning.
Oh, it's a scary way to die. Meanwhile, you're going to go to the cryogenic chamber after this today.
Yes, I am.
For your first time.
To bring down my inflammation.
You got it everywhere, I guarantee. Everybody does. You're going to feel like $1 million too.
I'm kind of immortal.
Neoprenephrine, your brain produces this incredible anti-inflammatory and antidepressant.
Really?
You're going to feel great.
Oof.
Woo!
I'm going to come out hugging. I'll come out hugging.
Muskox, yeah. Oh, so this environment where these people lived, I was like, this is an incredible, like, the village was less than 200 people, and, you know, it's just nothing but white. You look around, it's just frozen, everything. The ground is flat and white and goes on for as far as the eye can see.
God.
And these people are living there, man. And they had the little kids, and their kids were living there, and they're all bundled up except their faces. They're like, what's, you know, and Ranelle's like, what's your favorite food? He's like, I like to eat seal. They eat the seal and walrus. Walrus is my favorite food.
It's so
They're
weird.
Eating walrus. And they're staying alive.
If life started in East Africa, there were some people that just kept walking north. Fuck Spain and the sunshine and the grass. I don't want that. Now let's go where it's icy and it gets dark at noon. Yeah, this is home.
They didn't know any better, man. They didn't know where they were going. I mean, a lot of this, when this happened, people had a rudimentary understanding of navigation. Mm. They just went in search of food and kept going and
That's
stayed
true.
Together. And then wound up here. I mean, nobody would have gone across the fucking Bering Strait if they knew.
Right.
You know, like they just kept going. They just kept going. Really, everybody should have stayed in Africa.
Yeah.
But
although the Fertile Crescent was even where you want to be, like Iraq, right. where numbers started. Because you had grasses that grew like barley and millet and wheat. And it was easy, just the way, and you could domesticate animals.
You know, that's when they first started importing coffee.
Mm.
That's why they call them Arabica
beans. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all came from Ethiopia, all of it.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah, I had a fascinating gentleman on my podcast. What was his name? Peter, trying to figure his last name, Italian, find it.
He was a coffee guy?
Yeah, an expert, a real coffee expert and a really cool guy. And he ran down the history. What is his name?
Peter Giuliano.
Giuliano.
The myth I've heard, and tell me if this is right, the myth I heard was that Ethiopian goat farmers were watching their goats eat these berries, and they would get a pep in their step and have more energy when they were done eating the berries.
Huh, that's interesting.
And then the shepherds were like, well, if they eat them, maybe I'll eat them.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and based on their other types of cooking, the way you would, you know, cook something, they decided, let's try to roast these beans and see what happens.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the case. You know, that was an issue with, that's how they figured out the cordyceps mushroom, too.
Mm-hmm.
Cordyceps mushrooms, high altitude herding populations. They're watching their animals eat these mushrooms, and their animals would have, like, more energy. They're like, huh, what the fuck's going on here? And they figured out that it helps in oxygen utilization. That was before, like, the Chinese Olympic team started using them.
Wow.
Yeah. It's cool when, you know, you get animals to, try out food for you, see if they die. But the problem is, like, there's some shit that they can't eat that we can eat.
For the most part, though, they say that with dogs, and if the dogs eat onions, it makes them anemic and stuff. But for the most part, they say if a bird's eating it, I've heard this. I don't know.
You can eat it.
You can eat it.
That
they
makes
say
sense.
If an animal's eating it, but then again, I think birds eat certain berries. I mean, there are certain berries and mushrooms you can eat. You eat like half a mushroom and you're dead.
Yeah, there's certain mushrooms that look real similar to psychedelic mushrooms.
Yeah.
And if you eat them, you have like instant liver toxicity. Like you might have to get a liver transplant.
Yeah, you're going to die.
How fucked is that, man? You know, there was an old lady, not just one. I think there were several people that died in a nursing home because this old guy or old gal, I forget which one it was, went out in search of mushrooms and brought back some mushrooms and cooked it for everyone in the nursing home. And they fucking died.
Well, the oleander is super poisonous. And I heard...
What is oleander?
Oleander is... You see it. It's like a nondescript kind of bush with, you know, big kind of long cylindrical leaves. And... these guys used an oleander branch to cook their lamb, these tourists. They ran an oleander branch. And whatever happened, the sap got in the meat, and they fucking died.
Whoa.
And then they had this really expensive racehorse. And I don't remember where this racehorse is $100 million or something.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that racehorse ate a couple of oleander leaves and died.
God damn.
Like, why did you have oleander near the horse's stable?
Let's see a picture of oleander, Jamie. I need to know that this stuff is that fucking toxic. That stuff right there?
I believe so.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't it weird that like a lot of really pretty things are fucking terrible for you?
Uh-huh.
Like girls?
You could lose your house. Careful.
The guys that like are like not used to really hot girls and you see it coming.
When the guys who didn't get those girls in high school and college and then they... Then what happens is they get famous and they're 38 and 40 and they're kind of dorky.
Or rich. They don't have to get famous.
And then they date that trophy wife. Whoa. Or they meet a girl in a strip club or whatever it is. You got to be careful.
I was at this steakhouse the other night in Beverly Hills, like
Masters.
A very swank place. I don't need to name the place.
All right, sorry.
Very swank establishment. But I was astonished by the number of disgusting men with
pros.
Attractive women.
Yes.
I was like, this is fascinating. Like, this guy, I hope he can play a mean set of drums or fucking belt out a great tune or something. I mean, how did he get her? Like, what's going on here? Just really, really rich guys.
Oh, dude. In Beverly Hills especially, that is where the oldest profession in the world is rampant. Just prostitution.
It's a different kind of prostitution because it's legal. All you're
yes.
just you're just professional girlfriends and wives
right.
for like really ugly dudes.
It's a girl you keep.
Mad cash.
Yeah. I buy her. She's got an apartment. She's got a house. I mean, she's got a car.
We were there. Another thing we found fascinating was the amount of Arab license plates, Saudi Arabian plates. They fly their fucking supercars over here. There was a Bugatti Veyron, which is a $1.something million car, this insane car. And the palace plate, it said something palace, because I was with a friend who's Persian, and he reads Arabic. And it said palace, and then the number plate was like 222,222.
Damn.
Like, that was the plate. It was all twos, and it said palace. And it was this fucking, I don't know, like $1.something million car.
They're well,
like
you like cars, right?
Now, I don't like those.
What is that car? What is the
well,
point
here's
of
the
that?
Problem with those cars. I mean, they're incredible pieces of technology. I mean, they're
the
undeniable. The speed, the power, the opulence, the interior is gorgeous and beautiful. And, it's one of those things that Floyd Mayweather drives around in. But what I like is I like cars that are tactile. I don't even necessarily like new cars. I like I'm moving towards
something that can really drive.
I'm moving towards like older and older cars. Like even my Porsche is the newest car that I have. That's a 2007, and that's the last year that they made the GT3 or the last model that they made the GT3 RS the way mine is. It doesn't have any there's no stability control. There's some traction control, limited amount of traction control. That's it.
It's a race car,
and you can shut that off, and you're on your own. You just have this 520-pound horsepower, ridiculously light car that you feel everything.
Are you telling me it only weighs 520 pounds?
No, 520 horsepower.
Oh, okay.
It's less than 3,000 pounds.
Wow.
But somewhere around 3,000 pounds.
Yeah, okay.
But what I'm interested in, honestly, is like 1970s cars, like 1970 Porsche, that's 2,000 pounds, like 1,000 pounds less and less powerful. But you feel everything. No power steering. You feel the fucking bumps of the car.
Mm.
You feel the road. You feel the, like, literally you feel in your ass.
Tactile is the right word for that.
Yeah. You feel when the car's rear end is breaking loose. You feel when the tires are losing traction. You're sliding a little bit. That's fun.
Yeah.
Like, all this other shit, like
it's
these
physical.
Bugattis.
It's physical.
They're all computers. It's like I drove a Nissan GT-R. Do you know what one of those are?
No.
It's this incredibly technologically sophisticated rocket ship that Nissan's built. It's almost like a proof of concept vehicle. Like they almost like they lose money on it. It's a flagship vehicle, and it's so fucking unbelievably ridiculously competent and fast. That car right there goes 0 to 60 in less than 3 seconds.
What? It's pretty understated. It's not like
it's everything's functional. That car, it's not about, like, I think it looks cool because it looks like a spaceship.
Yeah.
But everything about it is about aerodynamics and about keeping the body pinned to the ground. It's heavy. It's about 3,900 pounds. So it's like 900 pounds more than my car is. And it's four-wheel drive, which, like, race car drivers traditionally like a rear-wheel drive car because they like the feel that it's pushing instead of pulling.
Mm.
They like to the control that you get because you can kind of steer with a throttle. If you know, as you're going into a turn, there's a thing called oversteer, right? So if you're going into a turn, and as you're going into a turn, you can hit the gas and your ass end will kick out and it'll change the angle of your entry into the turn. You got to know how to do it just right. You have to have this feel. So you got to know, like it's more fun than anything. Because really the correct line, if you're on a race course, is to have no ass end kick out. Like, you want it. You want everything to be glued. Every time your ass end kicks out, if you're racing, you're going to lose seconds. But for fun, like guys who love, like, those kind of like a 9/11, like a 1970 9/11. One of the things they like about it is the ass end will kick out. Like this has got Chris Harris. I've had him in here.
Call it tail happy.
It's oversteer.
Yeah.
Chris Harris is a very famous automotive journalist from the UK, and he takes it to the next level. He likes to power slide around corners.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Watching him do it, he's an artist at it, and he's going around corners in these cars. Every car he reviews, he takes and he power slides.
Wow.
Like everywhere. It's just power sliding these fucking things. Like, look, Chris Harris GT3 RS, 2016 GT3 RS. He's literally going sideways around corners with a 500 horsepower, $200,000 Porsche that they let him borrow.
That's bad.
So they let him borrow this car. He's just beating the fuck out of it everywhere he goes. No, that's an old one. No, look up. That's my year. That's like a 2007. 2016 GT3. Oh, go down there. So it says GT3 RS accelerations and power slide. See? Yeah, you can see it probably over there. You won't see Chris Harris do it, but you'll see a car that does it. And the idea is that these guys go around these fucking corners. And they go around these corners using the ass end of the car, like using. No, maybe see if they do it later. But anyway, it's just fun. Google Chris Harris GT3 RS 2016. Google that, and then you'll see Chris Harris on cars. Top one. Yeah. Now go like 3/4 of the way in there. And you'll see him on a racetrack with it even further. Yeah, here's this crazy fucker. Like, this guy's a madman, and he just knows how to drive.
Yeah, he does.
See, right there, he's just leaving a little bit of rubber. He's just trying to go fast, as fast as he can. See how he's taking these lines, the outside to the inside? It's all about trying to go around corners in as straight a line as possible so that you have as little pressure on the tires sideways as possible, and it's all about like choosing the correct line to go around the corners most efficiently.
He couldn't be more macho, by the
way. No, he's not.
He just looks like a thug.
No, he's not in real life though. But here, like, see all that rubber? Look, he's going sideways around that corner.
Look at
see that.
Damn.
Give some volume so you can hear that, because he's having a great fucking. Oh, we won't even hear it. We don't have our headsets on.
Traction is just mega, and you get that lovely little slippy feeling on the exit.
Slippy feeling.
That guy fucking loves cars. See
how
that?
How do you feel compared to a standard GT3? That's the big question. Motor's got more mid-range, really thumps you out, definitely has more traction.
See, if you have a car and you're selling it, you want a motherfucker like this reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
This guy loves cars. He loves them. And he's smart as shit. He really understands automobiles.
It's funny how you have, when you talk like this, you sound really, really smart.
Oh, yeah, man. That's why they sell fucking mops with that voice.
Right. You want this mop?
This mop is
the very best mop in the world.
Much more sophisticated than that mop you're going to buy.
That's right. It's simulated to musk ox, and it's got really fantastic sopping ability.
See, you don't find a thrill in this sort of automotive
me,
fuckery.
No.
There's nothing about this that's appealing to you. Look at that power slide.
If Bernard Hopkins is talking about how he sets up his jab, that's interesting to me.
How is this not interesting to you? I'm missing.
I've never been interested in cars.
You got a broken gene. There's something wrong with you. You're not even American.
I know.
You were born in another country. That's what it is.
But other countries.
Where were you born?
Remember, other countries like in Europe.
What country, though? Where were you
born? In the Philippines.
That's the thing. Philippines
then
not known
India,
for their cars.
Then India.
I bet you get crazy when you see a scooter. I bet if you see like one of those.
I do. I go crazy when I see a moped.
A Vespa?
When I see a rickshaw.
You give him a raw coconut, he loses his fucking mind.
Nuts. Yeah, I just never.
Maybe that's what it is.
I was into Bruce Lee. I was always into physical things like that. Although race car driving a sport?
Absolutely,
I think so.
100%.
It seems like it would.
I mean, it's you're managing your body as well as managing an automobile.
Right.
You without a doubt.
Like Formula One's got to be a sport.
Well, it's all your own movements. Your movements are dictating the movements of the car. Your movements of the wheel. Especially in the old days when they would actually shift with a clutch. Now everything's paddle shifters.
Why do you think Formula One is so huge in Europe and everywhere else, and not at all in the United States.
Because we got our own NASCAR up in this bitch, son. Though,
is that big? I guess it is.
It's huge. If you ever go to the South,
yeah, it's huge.
You ever go to the radio and like Georgia, and they start talking about NASCAR, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Did you see what Dale did last weekend? Let me tell you, boy. Let me tell you what. That guy knows how to drive a car. I'll tell you what, a car. Oh, he's driving a car. Who's Dale? They're like, you didn't see the NASCAR?
Isn't NASCAR not as technical? Isn't it kind of like...
All I know is they let chicks do it now, so...
So they let girls do it, and you know something's up. You know something's up with that sport.
Seems like I could probably do it better.
Are they competing?
I do have a penis.
Are they competing with men?
They claim to be. I think that Danica Patrick chick, she wins.
That's
right?
Downright un-American.
But she's tough as shit, man. She's probably the Ronda Rousey of race car driving.
Yeah.
She knows how to do it.
Easy on the eyes, too.
Not a bad looking gal.
Not at all.
That's a tough fucking sport, though, for sure. It's you got to maintain your nerves. You got to figure out when to hit the gas, when to hit the brakes. You got to know when to make your move. And you're piloting that fucking car. It's not automated in any way, shape, or form. It's all up to you to decide
how
to bust a move.
It's physical. It's super dangerous. And your reaction time means a lot, right?
Do they have a clutch? Does NASCAR have a clutch? Do they have are those things automatics?
See, I think they got clutches.
I would hope so. Being American and all.
Being American.
I hope they make those motherfuckers shift their own gears like Tom Cruise in Days of Thunder. NASCAR.
I'm only seeing like power shifting, maybe. I don't think.
They don't have a clutch?
I don't know. People are going to get mad.
What happened, America? What did we do with the left pedal? We need the left pedal.
Bring back the left pedal.
Yeah, man.
You son of bitches.
You need to drive a fucking real car, man. Go get yourself a Mustang GT350 when they come out.
I gotta keep filling it with gas, man.
Shut the fuck up with this gas jazz. What are you busy every minute of every day?
I'm very busy.
You can't stop at a gas station and put the fucking thing in the slot and go get yourself a Red Bull.
I can't do it.
Do you? You get swarmed? No?
Yeah, swarmed. Holy shit.
At the gas station.
It's Brian Callen.
It's the kid. Hey, man. Jesus. What is that, a Volkswagen?
Is that a Passat?
Is that a diesel?
No, I'm going to get the Tesla. What do you think?
Great car. I love it. Yeah, I would buy one. The only thing I wouldn't buy it for is if like you ever have to take your family out of the state, if the shit hits the fan, good luck.
Oh, I got another car for that.
Well, you need another car for that.
I got a Toyota Highlander for that.
Well, that's a good move.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Those are great cars.
Yeah, I mean, for a car around town, it's awesome. And you know, the other thing is, if you install solar on your house, you could fucking power that thing easily with solar power.
I just did.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, obviously it costs money for the batteries and the setup and the maintenance and all that jazz, but at the end of the day, once the money is spent on setting it up and the operating costs are fairly minimal in comparison to what it would cost to get electricity off the grid, you can be totally off the grid if you choose to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also power your fucking car with all this shit. And if the grid goes down, you can keep your power. There's ways to set that up.
What's interesting is when you put solar panels in your house, which I did, just try getting, it'll take you, the electric company, it's been 3 months now and they still haven't converted us. They just take their sweet time.
What do you mean? They keep charging
you? Yes. They have not yet given us the okay to switch over.
It just What's the okay?
They've got to just give you the okay. They have to give you some kind of a form.
So are you still spending money on electricity?
Yes, I am.
But is the electricity being generated by solar or by?
By them still. They will not let us
over. What the fuck is that?
Until we get a permit. And guess who has to do that? Some bureaucrat in the electric company.
Whoa. So they're dragging their heels. They're trying to keep people from going solar.
Yes.
You sure about that?
Yep.
Are you sure about the oil prices too, man? Come on.
Yeah. I know these things.
The government tinfoil conspiracy.
I follow these things.
I feel like there's got to be some way.
Well, look, man, here's how I feel. Like as far as conspiracy is concerned, I believe more in ignorance. So, government is my buddy who works. I just was at his wedding and he goes, if you think the government's really efficient, he's talking about intelligence or any of that stuff. He goes, I've been in the inner circle. He said, it's not. You just have to work for the government to know. Yes, we do some cool stuff, but this... A lot of it's just not as organized.
I'm sure.
And I was thinking about this. Like, people tease me for being a history guy. I'm not like Dan Carlin, but I try to, read my history. I was thinking about this. This new Harvard study just came out, and it said that 170,000 veterans from our recent wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, starting in 2003. We have 170,000 people that are 70% or more disabled. That is probably going to cost over their lifetime in the American economy $6 trillion to care for those people, which you can, which according to the study, you could purse out to be $75,000 of an American family. Forget the cost. Forget the cost. Think about 170,000 people that are 70% or more disabled. These are veterans. These are people that, that answered the call and they're all fucked up. And I was thinking about how, if the more you read about this war and how we got into it, a lot of it was because we didn't know the history of that country. And a lot of it was because we didn't know the history of the entire region. And I would make that argument. And my point is that it's really easy for all of us as voters to go about life without doing the right investigation. So when you vote for somebody and you vote for a policy, most of us vote along party lines because our team is over here, or because we're not a liberal, or we're not a conservative, we're not a Republican, we're not a Democrat. Instead of looking at the world as, wait a minute, we're going to go into Iraq? That's an interesting thing, man. How much do we know about the history? How much do we know about how that country's structured? And how much do we know about what's going to happen when we destabilize that regime? And when most of Congress didn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia, which is so important in Middle Eastern politics, that schism. And we're voting in these policies. And I think that we could have avoided some major tragedy. I don't know. I'm just saying that the more you know, the less likely you are to make these major fucking mistakes.
You know what's fucked, too? Because you're kind of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't when it comes to Iraq. Because if you think about leaving that guy there, Saddam Hussein was a fucking piece of shit.
Yes, he
of
was.
Epic proportions.
Yes.
And his children were absolute serial killers.
Yes.
His children, there is a story about him and his children from, I forget what magazine it was, maybe like Esquire or something like that from back in the day, GQ, something. But it was a terrifying story of all the atrocities that his sons have committed, including
100%.
Taking women on their wedding day as they were being married, kidnapping them, raping them, and then feeding them to dogs.
Yeah, Uday Hussein.
Feeding the husband to dogs.
Uday Hussein used to do all kinds of sadistic things. But think about the untold misery that that entire region now over the past 15 years, or actually 13 years, has dealt with.
Yeah.
Think about how many children and how many people. Think about the Yazidi women sold off into slavery by the ISIL assholes and the spawning of ISIL.
I think they need to fucking come up with a standardized name. I'm tired of hearing ISIL, ISIS,
yeah, Islamic State.
ISS.
Just say Islamic State.
The space station. There's too many different.
There are.
There's too many fucking.
ISIS, ISIL. Yeah.
What the fuck? You're the first guy I've ever heard say ISIL. I've seen it written. I'm like, what is this? You know?
I said it because it sounds fancy because I don't know what all.
It's like when John Cougar Mellencamp.
I don't know what the
OL
stands for.
Turned into John Mellencamp.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
The fuck? You
were
John Cougar.
He made a stand.
He used to be John Cougar Mellencamp. No, he was John Mellencamp, right? No, he was John Cougar first.
No, he was John Cougar Mellencamp, wasn't he? Then he changed
the first time he came out, I want to say he was John Cougar, and then he became John Cougar Mellencamp. His real name is John Mellencamp, obviously.
Yeah.
But he became...
Oh, so he changed... Oh, no. He didn't give his name. He didn't give himself the name Cougar.
No, no, no. I believe that the record company did. Here
we
go.
That's terrible.
Little Diddy.
By the way, great song.
John Cougar titled Miami in Australia. What?
Yeah, it's 1979.
It's called Miami in Australia? They call his album Miami, or he's Miami?
I don't know.
Wait.
But wait, John Cougar. I would have told
Cougar.
The record company to go, fuck, that's a terrible.
So the album is called Miami if you're in Australia.
Brian.
Australia's like, yeah, mate, we're not going to buy it, mate.
Brian
this whole
Tiger.
Thing with John Cougar, just John Cougar, it's not good enough. Mate, we need something spicy. Why don't you name it after Miami?
Change your name to Joe Panther.
We've seen girls from Miami. They have big asses. We like that. Call it Miami. We'll sell more.
It's a terrible Australian accent.
I did my best.
No, it's not bad. It's a hard one.
I only have a few Australian friends.
It's
I need to call them.
It's a hard one.
Turn of the shimp on the barbie. Oh, by the way, my second show for Melbourne is almost sold out. So,
good
if
Lord.
You're thinking about going, you fucks, you better act now.
Sold.
First one sold out.
Selling out over oceans.
Very close to selling out.
Jesus, you're famous.
I haven't been to Melbourne. Never. I'm excited. It's supposed to be like the San Francisco of Australia.
Really?
Like sophisticated and very just rich in culture. They supposedly have an amazing food scene. Like the food in Melbourne is supposed to be spectacular. I keep hearing that. I saw an Anthony Bourdain episode about it too. He went there and sampled some of the cuisine.
I've not watched enough of Anthony Bourdain.
He's the best. I love the shit out of it, dude. He's my boyfriend.
You love him.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's 58 years old. The guy gets into jiu-jitsu, just earns his blue belt.
It's fantastic.
He's a junkie when he was younger, like almost overdosed and died, yep. Smoked cigarettes until he had a kid, had the kid, said, you know what, I got to quit smoking cigarettes. Had a kid like was 50, you know? I mean, I just love him.
It's a great second
act. He's a bad motherfucker. Yeah. And it's also, I like the fact that he's a real artist, like with food. It made me, watching his show, the No Reservation show, made me reconsider what food is. Not you know, I always appreciated food, but I always said, oh, this guy, this restaurant's great. Like, we used to go to great restaurants all the time. And you'd be like, oh, I found this great Italian place. We'd go have a bottle of wine. Oh, this food's awesome. But I didn't think about the food as...
The artistry.
Yes.
Yeah, the creativity that goes into, like, changing something, like turning it on its ear.
Yeah.
Like, I had at this wedding, I had some salmon and some steak. And salmon and steak is pretty standard. Mm-hmm. And I've been alive a long time, and I ate that salmon and that steak with a certain sauce on it, and I stopped and I went, all right, hold on, something is going on here, and I'm having a little issue because I've never had salmon like this. And for me to say I've never had salmon, which I've eaten 1 million times, or I've never had steak that tastes like this, that's a big fucking deal, especially because I really pay attention. And I ran down there and I saw this cook with a ponytail, kind of a skinny dude, and I was like, what are you doing? What happened? He goes, oh, do you like it? I said, yeah, I like it. It's a little transcendent. That's how I feel. You know me, I'll get exaggerated. I said, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, but you cut small pieces here, and you are taking into consideration the relationship between the meat and your crazy delicious yam cake. Yeah. And this sauce that looks like it was made in heaven. I've never seen green that you kind of spill just so. It looked it looked like a fucking green pond that I could drink from. Meanwhile, he looks at me, he goes, yes, he said, relationship is very important, as is proportion. Most people think they need to create a big piece. But the minute you see it, I go, I finish the sentence. I go, I want more. He goes, exactly.
Here's why he's wrong, because he's never had barbecue in Texas. If he did, he would want to eat until his fucking body wanted to explode.
Oh, God.
And I had a bunch of fixins. I went to this place called Black's that was outside of Austin. It is the oldest barbecue place in Texas. I put a picture of it up on my Instagram of the food. Me and Aubrey and my buddy Ben O'Brien, we had the most insane beef ribs I've ever eaten in my life. Beef ribs are generally kind of chewy.
Yeah.
Not these fucking things. They cooked them for years. They shot that cow in the 80s, and they've been cooking them ever since.
Aubrey brought some into the office. I think it was from Black's. It's the best barbecue I've ever
He
had.
Brought it from Frederick's,
okay.
Which is another insane place. But that's in Austin. See that on the left?
Yeah.
That piece of meat? That was so fucking insanely tender and delicious. That place... apparently it's a real landmark in Texas. Black's, like, everything else was really good. Like, the spare ribs were good, the brisket was really good, but goddamn, if you go there, you gotta fuck with those beef ribs. They're insane. Like, we were all just blown away. Like, the three of us were like, what the fuck,
God.
Man? And we ate until we almost exploded.
Yeah, that looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go eat at Black's, and then go to the Honored Academy and go have John Wolfe take you through one workout.
Oh, he's great.
Dude.
He's great.
I was like, hey, John, what do you, like, first of all, he's couldn't be thicker. I was like, what's your nationality?
He's very,
like,
flexible.
He's ridiculously flexible with long arms.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I'm Japanese, Mexican, and English. Interesting, very warlike combination of people. Very
he's
warlike.
The sweetest guy ever. He's the last guy I would ever call warlike.
No, sweet as shit, but can put you in a world of pain with no weights, just using body weight.
Oh, yeah. He has a crazy hip complex series that he does.
Which we did.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing, right? Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah. Like, you get weird pain afterward. You're like, ow, why is the inside of my dick hurting? It's like,
it's so true.
He makes you do all this crazy
shit. He does it with a smile,
with
too.
Legs.
He's like,
yeah.
We're just going to take you through some mobility exercises. I was like, all right.
Well, Aubrey and I were there for my show. I did a show at the Moody Theater, which is insane. Probably one of the best shows of my life. It was amazing. It's crazy. God damn, I love Austin, Texas.
So do I.
Fuck, I love that place. But we did this place, this Moody Theater, and before the theater, we worked out at the Onnit Gym and then went to the Zero Gravity Float Spa that they have there. So I had a perfect day.
Ooh.
But when we were there, John was doing his certification seminars. He does these Onnit certification seminars and shows these potential trainers, people that want a career in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
Shows them all sorts of different ways to work out. Different.
Well, he's a scientist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was telling you about... this guy I work out with, Lou Parada, who is an old school bodybuilder, strongman. He's 60, almost 59.
How's he look?
He looks fantastic. He's originally from North Italy, so he's got that Austrian, like he's just got huge hands and a big kind of strong
jaw.
Still
works out like crazy?
Oh, yeah. But when you say crazy, like he's the guy who'll take you for 20 minutes and work you out and target your muscles in a certain way, and you're like, this isn't doing, I just feel like I could do more. And then the next day, you're sore as shit. Like he's a scientist. He knows, he's got 160 clients, and it's because he just knows what the hell he's doing, and you're in and out in 20, 25 minutes.
Well, if you could still look good in your 60s.
Oh, he looks fantastic.
Ripped. What's his dick taste like?
I'm glad you asked. I don't do that.
Fucking child I am. I was like, I shouldn't ask that.
You have to.
I always do.
That's all I do. That's all I do. I'm such an idiot.
Child. What does he look like? Like in his 60s? Pull a picture of this gentleman.
He's 60. Lou Parada.
Parada.
He's at P-Fit Gym on Lincoln, if you guys want to go.
I'm always impressed with dudes who are in their 60s that look great.
Yeah, he's 59.
Like Steve Maxwell, deep in his 60s.
Is he?
65,
that dude's
I think.
A stud.
It's an animal. All he does, goes all over the world and trains people. Just little seminars. Like has
so what's his philosophy?
He's a fascinating guy. He has a lot of philosophies. He's a very intelligent guy, and he's very well-read when it comes to ancient methods of fitness and
there
exercise.
There he is.
That guy's 60 years old?
Yep.
He looks great.
I know he does. Lou Parada.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's
he looks
awesome.
Better than Red Band.
Dude, I can't believe he's on the... Yeah, he looks amazing, dude.
Yeah, his skin looks great.
Yep. He eats a lot of fruits and vegetables, some meat.
He's working on that posture, though. What's up with that neck forward thing he's got going on there? Straighten up, fella.
He's been working out his whole life. And
straighten
he knows
up.
More about shit. He can do shit to you. And by the way, that's exactly what he looks like right now. And he can do shit to you that he just targets those muscles.
So this is just, he's giving people a stair workout.
All he's doing here is warming you up. You run maybe 10 stairs just to warm up. You're not going to stretch beforehand. He warms the muscles up, and then you just start slowly lifting, and then by the time 20 minutes is over, you're begging for mercy.
Yeah, they say not to stretch now before lifting weights,
right.
And that stretching actually can take away some of your performance.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, I wonder if that's the case with martial arts. Because I think there's a reason why people in ballet and dance and gymnastics stretch. I don't know the gymnastics. I might have made that up. But certainly dance, they stretch before they work out. They stretch before they practice.
Yes.
Because I think martial arts, there's a certain amount of flexibility that's necessary to achieve like that fluid motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're bound up and tense and tight, you're not going to have the same sort of dexterity. You're not going to have the same ability to place your foot wherever you want it to. There's going to be some resistance. But that resistance might actually be okay if you're doing something like squatting or jumping.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a different need that the body has when it comes to, like, I've always been, like, real skeptical of people telling me not to stretch.
Way to stretch, I think, and I do agree. I think it depends on the kind of movement you're doing and stuff, but they say the first thing you want to do is warm the muscle up, but also overstretching, like a lot of yoga people develop arthritic conditions because the tendons are genetically, you know, you either have longer tendons or shorter tendons. So in other words, like a hinge of a door, some people can only open their door this much, other people can open their door all the way. Like you have very flexible, you're really flexible. And so when people overstretch those tendons, what happens is if the tendon is shorter and you're trying to make it longer, what'll happen is the joint will start to compromise and you'll pull more of the joint apart. Therefore, you get water or air into that joint, which apparently is what creates an arthritic condition. So when you're constantly expanding and not doing some contractual work, that's where you run
into problems. So it's like yoga people that are not lifting weights as well? Is that what it is?
Yeah, if you're stretching too much. And it does weaken the muscle. When you're stretching on, you know, cold, when you're cold and you're stretching, and then you go and play soccer, a lot of girls, especially, were tearing their ACL. And then when they had them start changing the way they trained, more weightlifting, more more warming the muscle up beforehand, that's how they were avoiding more of those ACL tears.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
it's God, interesting so how they learn. You do.
Thank you.
You're
keep
so impressive.
Keep going.
It's interesting how they learn too. It's like they almost have to like watch people fuck up and go, what's he doing wrong? Like, why is he getting injured? You know, one of the things
that's
Maxwell.
Kind of how I feel about everything in life.
Sure.
Like the next time we go into a war, like I was talking about, I hope that we learn and we go, what's the history of the region? I mean, you learn by mistakes. You learn the hard way.
Well, you should listen to Dan Carlin's series on World War One. Have you heard it yet?
I haven't.
Remember when he was talking about the difference between the World War One and the previous wars, and that like this, they had all these ideas about war,
chivalry, honor, standing up in the
all
fire.
That shit went away.
Had no, well, because with a machine gun, you all die.
Yeah. Well, not only that, they started introducing things like
bombs, gas.
Yeah, Fritz Haber.
Well, Fritz Haber was a fascinating character.
Yeah.
Because you know that
the
Fritz
most
Haber,
fascinating.
Yeah, because he figured out a way to take nitrogen out of the air, create ammonia. This is from Radiolab.
Mm-hmm.
And that ammonia is what they think that half the population of the world today has Fritz Haber nitrogen in their bloodstream. The reason we can feed 7 billion people and soon 10 billion is primarily because of the process Fritz Haber invented, which is getting nitrogen out of the air and into the soil, which is how you create fertilizer. Problem is, it's also how you create explosives and poison gas.
The first one to figure that out, how to use poison gas on troops.
Chlorine gas.
So while he was being awarded a Nobel Prize of Science for creating the Haber method, he was also being wanted for war crimes by the United States by gassing people.
Yes.
And the way they died, apparently, if you listen to the Radiolab podcast, they drown in their own phlegm.
Well, how about what they do, how they end it, which is he created an insecticide called Zyklon A, which is an insecticide. And the reason it has Zyklon A is because it has a certain smell to it. You put a scent in it so you know when it's in the air to avoid that area, the way they do with gasoline. Gasoline doesn't have that scent. They put that scent in there. That's an artificial scent, so you know if there's a gas leak. And the same with Zyklon A. When the Nazis were figuring out what to do with their quote-unquote Jewish problem, and they talked about the final solution, they said, let's use this Zyklon A and take the scent out. It'll be Zyklon B. And the irony is Fritz Haber, who was a secular Jew, who was a patriot, a German patriot, who figured out a way to feed half the world, his technology ended up killing his extended family and his friends. It's kind of crazy, man.
He actually wound up leaving Germany, and he was ostracized by the rest of the world. It's a fascinating podcast. It's called The Bad Podcast.
Yeah.
And it's one of the Radiolab ones that is amazing. There's a great one that got out now about elements, about this woman who was going crazy, and lithium was the only thing that she's bipolar.
Wow.
Lithium brings her way back to normal. Well, lithium is just an element.
It's
a salt, apparently. I didn't know that. I thought lithium was some sort of chemical. You need to listen
to it. Did you listen to CRISPR?
But this lithium thing that she's taking is killing her. It's killing her. It's causing her kidneys to fail.
Wow.
So she has to get off the lithium. And so they're talking to her while this is going on. In the podcast, she's saying, like, this is so complicated for me because there's one thing that's killing me, but it's also allowing me to be me. Really, really fascinating.
God damn.
Yeah, CRISPR, we've talked about it a few times on this podcast, the ability to manipulate genes. And this is the beginning. CRISPR, if you've never heard that one, that's another great one. Radiolab is the shit. It's a fucking amazing podcast.
It really is.
So interesting, you know? So many fascinating subjects to cover.
What would you do if they could manipulate your genes? What do you want different?
It's going to be a real problem when people do it. Because there's going to be no regular people left. I think we're looking at life now as, if you go back to the early forms of life that were on this planet, just single-celled organisms turn into multi-celled organisms. They evolve from random mutations and, you know, natural selection, all the different various factors that cause a person to come out of the, you know, primordial slime that we originated from. if you look at what we are now, we look at all that. It's like this. This is like how it progresses. You know, this is how a dinosaur turns into a bird, and this is all we can see. These are the
early
primates.
Dude, you're
speaking
about evolution. Yeah. You know, most of the Republican candidates don't want to talk about that. This is crazy.
If you look at all that stuff, we look at this timeline. This is long, slow, crazy timeline. It's really difficult to trace for the average human mind. You know, you look at a primate and you look at a human, you go, well, human used to be something like that a long time ago. What? Fuck. And, you know, and you see pictures of cave people, we kind of get it, but that's 60,000 years ago. We say, well, that 100,000 years ago, million years ago, whatever the fuck it was. It seems so long. It's hard. It doesn't really register. It's like when someone says $1 trillion, like, okay, a trillion years. I don't get it.
Right.
You know, it's going to happen like that. There's going to come
along. We're
going to
control our own
technology,
evolution.
Yes. And I think it's only one part of the bigger problem. I think in our ability to control our own bodies is just a part of the evolution of technology. And the evolution of technology that allows us to do that is also going to create artificial life, which is many, many more times complicated.
Well, it takes the element of chance out of the entire equation.
Yeah.
So when we're able to control exactly how we look and what we develop into and what we are resistant to, it's kind of like what we're doing with crops. And I think I feel like we are going to be able to take this machine, which is what we are, which is kind of a fascinating, an incredibly complex machine, but technology is going to render this machine kind of obsolete, I feel like. I feel like ultimately we're going to trade in this machine for something that works a lot more efficiently and is more and lives longer and all that stuff. If you could do it, why not?
Yeah, but that's even assuming that what we are is going to maintain. Like, I think we are a technological caterpillar. That's what I think. I think we're a caterpillar that becomes a butterfly. And right now, we're
in
the middle of making a cocoon.
That's really interesting.
I just don't think this is a good design.
You mean mentally?
I think life.
Yeah.
I think if we create artificial life, we create some sort of an artificial thing that somehow or another profits on it staying alive. Like, there's a reason why we want to stay alive. We want to procreate. We want to keep the human race alive. And we want to react to all of our instincts, all of our natural instincts and the natural reward systems that have been put in place over the eons to make sure that we keep breeding and keep staying alive. That's where your ego comes from. That's where lust comes from and greed and jealousy. All these things are like they're motivating factors for you to improve on your condition.
More immortality, ultimately.
And keep fucking and keep making more babies. Yeah. Why are they coveting thy neighbor's wife? Why? Because they want to fuck that bitch and shoot some loads into her and make a baby with her. Got to make babies. You got to keep going. I think that's a really shitty design. And I think it ultimately, its main goal is to, for it, for the biological entity, to create a more sophisticated and much more efficient entity. And that's what it's going to do. This is the caterpillar. And this caterpillar is going to become some indescribable butterfly. Some butterfly that can manipulate its environment like never before. Some butterfly that literally creates worlds.
If you extrapolate that, and if you then say, look, I have all my biological needs are taken care of, so I don't have to worry about disease, I don't have to worry about food, and I'm optimal. I'm at my optimal. My machine can adapt, and it probably won't die. You're still left with something that's very interesting to me, which is now if you've taken out the equation, that sort of rudimentary need to procreate, that rudimentary need to replicate yourself, that rudimentary need to sort of, or rudimentary might be the wrong word, but the need to be immortal, to keep your genes through whatever it is going, then you're kind of left with
why?
Yourself and why.
Right.
You know?
Well,
like, what am I doing
pleasure.
Here?
But what
well, no, pleasure's different. I think
where pleasure... Where are you getting positive experiences, right? Fun, excitement, pleasure.
To what end, though?
Positive.
To get to know yourself better?
What are those things? The question is, what are those things? What is positive? What is love? What is happiness? What is friendship? What is achievement? All those things are rewards.
Yeah.
All those things are rewards for behavior that's ultimately going to lead to procreation. bonding leads to community. Community leads to safety. Safety leads to your children surviving. All those things are connected.
Yes.
Procreation, acquiring of things, becoming more valuable as a member of your community and more desirable as a possible breeding candidate. All those things, they all contribute to ultimately to procreation. That's like a big part of what everything that we do is.
But then there's another side, which is play you could define as that which you do for the sake of doing.
Right.
Right? And that's probably when you're most yourself. So if play is the case, then it seems like we were just talking about this. Like people say, I don't know what to do with my life. And I always say to younger people, I'm like, look, man, I don't know what to do with your life either. But I do know that it's really fun to get good at a language. Like watching you play pool, that's a language. That's something you've come very close to being is really, really good at, and you have a deep understanding of it. You gain a deep understanding, this great pleasure in being fluent in a language, like say pool or jujitsu or boxing or even another language or in an instrument like guitar. I think you develop an understanding, and sometimes that you can't necessarily put into words. It's something you have to experience, but God damn it, is it satisfying. Mm-hmm. And it's satisfying in and of itself.
Okay, but why?
Well, okay, so here's my answer. I think, well, I don't have the answer, but I think it may lie in the area of understanding and coming closer to something maybe people call consciousness, coming closer to something that's bigger than yourself, communion with something that is without measure, but that you know is there.
Don't you think, though, also that if you don't look at it like in some sort of spiritual way, but look at it in terms of just biology and natural reward systems that are put into place by success leading to procreation, people that are really good at things, you get good at things that are difficult to solve, like solving puzzles is integral to survival. It's integral to innovation leads to more efficiency leads to more food leads to people staying alive. The better you get at something, the more you're rewarded with those positive feelings, those natural reward systems that are put in place to make sure that people figure out their fucking part on this world, figure out their way through this life until they can invent artificial life. Get them hooked on material possessions. Get them hooked on this idea of getting the newest, greatest, latest shit. Get them hooked on technology. You need a watch that you can swipe, and you need all these different new crazy things. And the more these things get fueled, the more the technology grows. The more the technology grows, the more the inevitability of an artificial life form exists.
Okay, but here's what I'm so blown away right now.
Me too, man.
But here, take your pants off for a second.
I came already.
Oh boy.
Shit.
Here's where trip.
Sorry.
I'm 48 trip. No shots. Here's what I think though. So when you talk about technology, most of us are talking about a tool you can use for the here and now. And that technology allows you to speak to people more clearly and faster and get places faster and all that stuff. They're all tools. But then there's another side to fucking reality that I'm fascinated with. And I don't know why it's there. But there's something that goes beyond experience. There's a reality that is beyond experience. And you know what I mean by that? I'll tell you. The number infinity is not something we'll ever see, but it's something we imagine and something we use in mathematics. Negative numbers, negative integers and things are mathematical constructs that you can't actually see and don't have material measurement necessarily, but they are theoretical and we use them and benefit from it. Here's another great example. The mathematician in 1860 who spends his whole life thinking of some weird mathematical equation. It's got no bearing on the material world whatsoever until 150 years later, and now we're using it to measure the difference between fucking, you know, the crater on Mars and how it relates to things like that. And I just think that sometimes whatever human beings have an imagination, it's put there. The imagination is put there somewhere. And I'm not getting into this mystical stuff. I'm just saying I am curious to know why we have what separates us from animals is potential, is anything we can imagine seems to be within our reach in terms of reality. And I
eventually.
Think, yes, and I think that nostalgia, that need to go physically further than we've ever gone before and mentally further than we've ever gone before, there is no limit to human potential. There seems to be zero limit to human potential, to the point where we will render ourselves, our very biology, and even our mental paradigms obsolete, where we will achieve immortality.
But wait a minute. Will we be we then?
Exactly.
But we won't. We'll be something better.
That's what I mean.
And what we'll be is something that we create. So you're essentially agreeing with me.
We're going to create. I fucking am.
We're going to create an artificial life form.
Well, that artificial life form might be the butterfly, right?
Yes. If we need absolutely to constantly innovate, and we do. Mm-hmm. No one is ever going to look at a computer and say, we're done. No one's going to look at an iPhone and say, there's no need for the 6S. The 6 is perfect. Let's stop there. Who needs 12 megapixels? I got 8. I'm happy as fuck. I take great Instagram pictures. No. Yeah. No one's going to be happy. We're going to get bored. And it's a part, it's an inexorable part of being a human. There's this weird thing you can't take out of us where we look with awe at the guy who decides to live in a log house and go fishing every day. Mm. This is a guy who lives off the land. What? Like, they're so freaky that we have TV shows dedicated to them.
Yes.
Like, let's watch these people in Alaska.
Well, they're walking anachronisms. Those are like throwbacks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's interesting is that they're bucking the grid and saying, I can still do it the way we did 150 years ago.
There's that, and there's also the fact that they're out there braving the wild. They're braving the atmosphere. They're braving the harsh parts of the world that we don't want to visit. Like that's the whole thing about Life Below Zero, that show that I love.
Yeah.
It's 200 fucking miles above the Arctic Circle is where these people live, some of them. You know, I mean, just fuck, man. Sue Aikens, the chick that I had on the show, she's amazing. If you've never listened to that podcast, it's one of the best ones I ever did.
Really?
Oh, my God. She's a fascinating woman, man. She's in her 50s, lives up in Alaska by herself in this fucking... You can't even have buildings up there because it's on this land that has to have temporary structures because of whatever goofy fucking law there's in place. So she has tents. They're these giant tents with, like, hoop wires and, you know, very thick canvas. But they're fucking tents, man. And she's out there with grizzly bears and wolves. And she everywhere she goes, she's strapped. She got attacked by a bear. Fucking bit her head, broke her hip, fucked her up. She went to the hospital. I mean, she was fucking on her back for, like, 7 days before they found her. She went to the hospital, got fixed up, went back, shot the fucking bear and ate it. That's she's the most gangster bitch on the planet. You know, she's like right up there with Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
She's so gangster. Just Ronda if she's 50. You know, this chick is hard fucking core. Fascinating, though. Like that this woman chooses to, that's where she's getting her jollies. There's her. That's her. I love that lady.
That's
her house, man. That's her fucking house. That's where she lives. See, it's got like a wooden side. The top of that is all cloth. It's a tent.
She lives up there alone.
Yes.
Does she get a, doesn't
but she
get
occasionally
lonely?
Has visitors. And no, she travels. She has children and grandchildren. She does whatever the fuck she wants. But that's what those things look like. They're temporary structures. Mm. She gets her gas flowing in these gigantic planes, and she fills planes up. She's like a waypoint. She owns like a filling station up there, and that's how she makes her living. And she also, people can come stay in, like she has structures up there. They can come stay in caribou hunt and do a bunch of different things, and she'll take people on like guided tours of the area now. It's especially, look at that. There's the place where she lives. What's that?
It's amazing.
Oh, it's so amazing. She's incredible. But she's not just dealing with the environment. She's dealing with the animals. She's dealing with mortality. And, you know, she lives a subsistence lifestyle up there. Most of what she gets, either she gets flown in or she shoots it and eats it. Go scroll back up to the top. There was those. Who are those people that were there?
She loves it, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. See, she provides, like, this says hunting and fishing.
Elk?
No, those are caribou. Those are caribou antlers. They have these crazy antlers. Oh, those are actually
delicious.
Reindeer.
Those,
I mean, that's what a reindeer
antlers,
is. It's so the relative of the reindeer, like pretty similar. So Kavik, where she's at, she has these hunting camps that come up there because these people, see, you have self-guided camps. She just, the caribou are up there, and they go by every year. There's like a time where they go up there. It's like August or some shit. And during that time, that's when they fly people up there, and they go caribou hunting. But they'll walk by in these massive herds, hundreds and hundreds of caribou sometimes. And you just lay down, you pick one, and you shoot it. and you eat it, and you get hundreds of pounds of the most delicious meat you'll ever eat in your life. That's a moose,
size
actually.
That moose.
Yeah, that's a different animal.
Yeah.
But that's a moose too. But the other one were caribou, and they're unbelievably delicious too. So are moose, man. I had some moose sirloin the other day that I cooked from last year when I shot that moose last year.
Yeah.
I cooked it the other day.
It's not a place for the vegan.
No, that meat is so good. Like if you ate it at a restaurant, it'd be like your favorite meat ever. But they can't, you don't sell moose commercially.
I still haven't gotten any from you.
Dude, come over, man. When are you coming over? Come over. Let's cook.
Maybe I'll do it today.
Come on over.
After we cryo.
Let's do it. Come on over. I'll cook for you.
I asked Tim Kennedy, I was watching, talking to him as he was cryotherapying. I said, do you shiver? And he said, I do well with the cold. Like, you're such a fucking stud.
You get very excited by him.
Yes, he's my boyfriend. Anthony Bourdain's yours, and Tim Kennedy's mine. I fantasized about just being buddies.
Mm, what would you guys do together most
hunt,
of the time?
Hunt wild boar on horseback with spears. Duh.
That sounds like an ineffective way of doing
shoot
it.
Shoot guns and then cuddle,
you have guns.
Cuddle and watch action films.
Why don't you just shoot the boar with guns if you have guns?
Because spears are more macho and you gotta have good throwing motion.
Yeah. I've thought that about bow hunting. Like, why bow hunt? Why do you have to bow hunt? Because it's more of a challenge, I guess. But the idea of challenge is kind of dangerous if you're hunting.
I guess.
And also for the animal. A lot of wounded. I've been watching a lot of hunting shows where they show wounded animals with
bow
hunting.
Do you think you get tired of... Do you think, like, once the mystery of something goes away, you want to move on? Like, what is it about archery?
Oh, archery is a great discipline. I love archery as a discipline.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing to do. Like, just shooting targets. Come on over to the house, man. We'll fucking shoot some targets today. I'll have to get one of my little girl bows out for you to use. But
I know. I need the 60-pound. The 90's too hard for me.
I don't use the 90 anymore. I use
a
70.
I think I could pull back a 70, couldn't I?
You might struggle. You had a hard time with the 80 last time.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. It's also something you shouldn't start out with. You should start out with like a 40
just
or 50.
Just to get used to that.
Yeah, just get used to the motion and also get used to the fundamentals of archery. You don't want to be struggling with the bow while you're learning how to do it.
I take creatine now.
Do you?
I do.
Makes you bigger? Makes
your
face fat.
I'm a little thicker. I'm carrying water weight, you guys.
Makes your face puffy.
I look like I'm on my period.
But it's just a fun thing to do, like lining up the target, keeping everything straight. And there's something that when you're doing something that's really difficult, like it's hard to get the arrow to go where you want it to go. It takes a lot of practice. I shoot about 100 arrows a day,
every day.
I have archery targets all over my yard. I have like 5 of them, 6 of them in one side. I just ordered a giant elk. It hasn't gotten here yet, but it's this fucking huge rubber elk.
Sounds like your priorities
somewhere.
Are where they should be.
For me, they
I want
are.
A giant
what
elk.
Do I want to do? What do I
want
to do?
I want a giant. Who's this giant rubber elk for? It's Joe Rogan. Ah, yeah. He's got a rubber pig as well.
They're very popular. A lot of people have them.
A giant rubber elk?
That hunt with bow hunting with elk because you want to make sure that you're going to hit that spot. You want to, and looking at an animal is different than looking at a target, you know? And a lot of what archery is repetition. Repetition and muscle memory, and it's got to like be ingrained in your mind how you line a shot up and what are the movements when you release that arrow.
See, I love all that stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
I just like, that's why, like, you know, boxing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working out with some, like, at Box and Burn, this guy, Chris Van Eerden, who's fighting for the IFO or IBO title. He's defending his international title on Spike TV. What is it? Anyway. And he, like, just learning how, like, just, like, the intricacies of boxing. I know I'm never going to master it or get really good at it, but I just like reaching.
Right.
I like just reaching. If you think about it, 48 years old, it's so ridiculous. What's going to happen? I'm going to be thrown into, when the Mongols come, they're going to throw me into a pit. Ha ha, you have to box that guy. Let's bet on him. And all of a sudden, I'm going to surprise everybody with my fucking, my jab. Bop, bop, bop.
You'd be like Brad Pitt in that movie Snatch.
That's all I want to be.
You'd be
I just want to be a gypsy fighter with that body.
You want to talk like that, too? Yeah, man, getting good at things is fun. I mean, but, you know, the ultimate question, like we were talking about before, is like, why is it fun? Like, what is it about it? I don't know, but I just know that for me to stay happy, and this is my own craziness, I need to constantly be engaged in things that challenge me. That's it. I've tried a bunch of other ways to be happy. I can't just chill out and relax all the time. It's just not in me.
Me neither.
But I like to relax. Like, I do love relaxation, but I have to feel like I've earned it. I don't like regular laziness, like wake and baking and getting up. That leaves me with this hollow anxiety.
Me too.
Like, I can't do that. I've tried it. I've tried to just be lazy. It fucks with my head too much.
I agree.
I can only appreciate watching television or going to the movies if I've done my work.
Mm-hmm.
If I haven't done my work, I don't, you know. And there's happiness in achievement, too. There's happiness in getting shit done.
Yeah, but that also goes back to what we were talking about, where, like, I'm trying to work on this new hour now. Now I shot my 1 hour, I'm mm-hmm. editing it, and I'm throwing all that away, and you got to start with new stuff.
Right.
What drives me, actually, I swear to God, is not laughs. I've had enough laughs. You know, you can get inoculated to that. That's a beautiful thing to get a lot of laughs. But what was more important is I want to see what else I can come up with. I want to see if I can tap into my real potential and come up with something even better.
Of course.
That challenge is, again, going, what is my potential? Like, what do I really have in me? And how much time, if I spend like 8 hours a day thinking about it as opposed to 2 hours a day?
Well,
that's what nags at me.
It's also, you realize, as, you know, an artist man, as an artist, you're constantly growing, and you're constantly getting. That's one of the number one problems with older comedians that have the act from 20 years ago.
Ugh.
We've seen those guys before.
Ugh.
Time passes you by.
Yeah.
Comedy is like a sandcastle. You build it. I mean, people can look at the photos of it from the past, but
you
got the shit's gone.
Yes.
It's gone, and once it's gone, it's gone. Like, if Lenny Bruce came back from the dead today and went up Saturday night at the Comedy Store, he'd eat
die.
A plate of dicks.
Yeah, he'd die.
He would, because the culture has changed.
Yeah.
If you go and listen to his, and I'm not a hater at all. I mean, I think Lenny Bruce is the most important figure in all of stand-up. He's the original. He's the godfather.
Yeah.
You go over to my house, I have Lenny Bruce posters. I have a concert poster from the Fillmore. I have one of his concert movies that's framed in a poster. To me, he's like, that was the original.
Mm-hmm.
He fucking took a lot of crazy chances and got arrested for it and really ultimately went crazy.
Yeah.
The last parts of his life were him going to court, doing heroin, died on his fucking bathroom floor doing heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he was going to court all the time, and he would do shows where he was just completely gone. He would just read legal transcripts to the audience. There's video of it.
Yeah.
You can watch it. I bought a bunch of these videos and watched them with VHS. I was like, wow, this guy just went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, he was just going through, so dig, the judge says, and he's like reading these transcripts with no comedy. There was nothing funny about it. He just lost all of his point and was obsessed with this. So he laid the foundation. He laid the groundwork that for guys like you and me and everybody else that does stand up. But wouldn't work today. If he had the same act, if he was alive today, he'd figure it out. He'd figure out, you know, he's a comic. He'd figure it out,
mm-hmm.
but he'd have to grow. Like, everyone has to grow. Your comedy grows, and it changes as the culture changes. If you go back to like Eddie Murphy Raw, there's some fucking terrible homophobic shit.
Yes, there
Eddie
is.
Murphy Raw.
For real. I was there. I went to the actual concert.
But did you think it was terrible and homophobic
Not
at
then.
The time?
Not then.
No, it was okay.
Yeah.
It was acceptable.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And that
how
was
that goes.
When I wasn't, I've never been, you know, I've always been sensitive to people's feelings. I was never wanted to gang up on somebody who's gay, but I just didn't think of it as something that was bad.
Oh, speaking of which, I forgot to bring this up. I wanted to, Jamie, go to my Twitter page, and there's a tweet that I posted today about this woman from Kentucky that is, the Kentucky clerk denies marriage license under God's authority. There's a video of these guys. Did you see the video?
No.
This is a new one. This is from today. This is a new person. Like, there was the other person. This is a new person. This woman is talking to these gay guys that want to get married, and she won't let them. And they're saying, under whose authority? Like, what? The video would drive you crazy.
Well, she watch, is a matter of faith.
Put those on. Put those on. Put those on. Check this out. Go full screen, because this is awesome.
That you're supposed to issue marriage
laws. And we're not issuing marriage laws.
The Supreme Court
today.
Denied your stay.
We are not issuing marriage laws today. So
based
would,
on what?
I would ask you all to
why are you not issuing marriage licenses today?
Because I'm not.
Under
why?
Whose authority
whose
are you
authority?
Not issuing
under
laws?
Under God's authority.
Your lawyers tell you
I don't
to
believe
God
in
tell
God.
You to do this? Did God tell you to treat us?
I don't believe
like this.
In your
I've
God.
Asked you all to leave. You are interrupting my
You can
business.
Call the police if you want us to leave. You can call the police.
I don't.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
This is a change.
It's what makes our country modern.
Well, this is a shift in culture. I mean, this is like that woman that's saying that is crazy. She's locked in an ideology, and she's like, her very job relies on the government. I mean, that's what the government is telling her. I mean, she's a government employee. Mm-hmm. The government is telling her that you have, I mean, the Supreme Court has made a decision. You have to allow these people to get married. And she's like, nope, I believe in God first.
Well, I think, though, that we also have to recognize, I don't agree with her because I'm not a religious guy, but it is a matter of faith for her. And if she's going to be a government employee, though, she's got to uphold the law of the land. We live in a secular society, which is the separation of church and state.
Do we really? Yeah. What about one nation under God?
But that's the same state It's the same state that wanted to teach, the school board wanted to teach creative design instead of evolution.
Isn't that the same state where they get the devil statue now? They have to have a devil statue? Which state has to have a devil statue because the Satanists won the religious right to put a devil statue where the Jesus statue? They have equal representation.
Pagans, you mean?
No, Satanists.
Satanists.
Yeah, no Satanists.
That's hilarious.
Satanist statue. We'll find out where
this
the fuck that is.
This is where it gets crazy, though. This is really where it gets
Detroit?
Crazy.
No, I don't think that's it. There's one in the South, I'm pretty sure. Is that what's that one? July 6th, right there above Fox News. That's probably the most. whenever in doubt and you're looking for something ridiculous, Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing though because if somebody has a strong religious conviction, for example, and they're pro-choice because
Detroit.
They think that. I mean, pro-life because they think that abortion is murder.
Go back to that so we can see that. That was awesome. Look at the statue.
It's a pretty cool statue, by the way.
Look at it. It's amazing. It's pretty dope. So I guess it is Detroit. I felt like it was happening somewhere
Holy
in the deep south.
Mother of God, look at that. Yeah. That's the angel Lucifer, right? Look at that goat head.
Well, it's a satanic statue that I believe they're putting up as a goof. The satanic temple. File photo provided by the satanic temple. Yeah. By the way, I've been accused of being a Satanist.
What?
Yes. I went to Duncan Trussell, performed at one of the LaVeys, what's his name? Something, the son or the grandson or something like that, was getting married. Duncan Trussell performed his satanic puppet show at this guy. And I went there and I wore the guy's t-shirt. Now there's like videos accusing me of being a Satanist. I just like to clear the air. I am neither a religious person nor am I an anti-religious person. I am not a Satanist, but I have done mushrooms and I've done like some pretty powerful psychedelic drugs. So the possibility of there being another much more powerful and wise force out there, it does not escape me. I think it is absolutely possible that there's something way more wise than us that we're not totally in touch with. But I also don't think it has a dick. So I don't think it's a he. I don't think it's a his.
Yeah.
You know?
We either do Christians, either do Muslims, either do Jews.
But why do they say in his presence?
Because
his word.
If you were to, for example, give a name to
Yahweh.
You can say Allah and Yahweh, but Yahweh among the Orthodox is to trample on their sensibilities because when you give a name to God, okay, when you give a name, when you say God is, this is what's heretical about the idea of Jesus Christ to Jews and to Muslims, because if you create parameters around God, if you suggest God is a man or a woman, if you suggest God has a name, then you are assuming to understand his greatness and his infinite.
Are you hypnotizing
presence.
Me while you're rubbing your forearm
yes, I
hair?
Am. Yes,
you're saying
I am.
This the same time. I feel like locked into your gaze.
That's what happens when you get when I start talking about religion.
God is a dick.
But
it's
here's
his,
my question:
in his name.
See, I think some religion. I think Christianity is a powerful religion when used the right. So a lot of Christians just preach love and doing unto others as you'd have them do unto others. It's got powerful conversion ability. Some people who saw nothing and find inspiration and love through God. Listen, I'm not a religious guy, but I respect whatever that conversion can be because a lot of good things are done in the name of Jesus Christ. Just as a lot of the suppressive things can be done in the name of your God. So I'm not so ready to condemn all religion.
Good things can be done. Why are they done in the name of something that's not real? And why does that make that something not real more valuable?
But that may
be. What's done is what's good.
But now hold on. Because when you say it's not real, people have inspiration and deep feeling.
Not real.
From their religion. From their religion.
Digging holes.
No.
Hammering nails.
Sir?
Building buildings.
Sir, I'm going to have to ask
you. What Donald Trump does, that's real.
Yes,
you
well.
Son of a bitch, he's a builder.
I think religious communion, prayer, meditation and things, is good for making you. It does make people more humble.
Well, any sort of inspiration is good. Anything that motivates you is good, especially if it motivates you in a positive way. It's good. But the real problem becomes when someone like this lady decides that those two guys can't get married because her God prevents it.
But the founding fathers had an answer to that, which was to separate church and state.
Until
wasn't
the
it George
fucking
Washington?
Commies came along.
Right.
And then we had to jump back in the religious game. And then Ronald Reagan came along. We jumped into the religious game with politics.
Well, now to get elected, you've got to believe in Jesus Christ.
The Christian nation. You have to. You literally do. Yeah. You have to be a Christian. You know, this is a Christian nation.
Yeah.
Christian nation. Well, it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be a nation. One nation under God was only created back when the McCarthy era was going on.
There are parts of this country where when you perform and you say the word Jesus, the room gets very quiet.
You got the wrong places. You're going to the wrong spots. You just stand up where that doesn't. They should know you by now. You should be able to do anything you want.
Yeah, well, I do.
Speaking of Kentucky, there's a thing that I posted that was fucking fascinating about the dangers of misgendering someone. Gad Saad posted it, and I retweeted it. It is adorable, and it's the fucking lunacy that's going on in colleges these days. You're supposed to walk up to someone and say, "Hi, nice to meet you. What pronoun should I use for your name?"
Yes, it's called fucking lunacy. It's lunacy.
That was the direction they said
it's
that you
tyranny.
Should give. Because you don't want to misgender.
Yeah, academics have created a tyranny. There's a tyranny to how you have to walk around and speak. They even want to control what you say in the bedroom. It's called tyranny. In the name of equality, and in the name of tolerance, and in the name of protecting the disenfranchised and the marginalized, we have created a fucking tyranny. I can't stand the academic world for that reason. They drive me nuts. They are beyond sense.
How does it happen,
sense.
Though? Because they're so important when
the
it comes to education.
The same way anything happens.
Distribution of information is so important, but socially, there's this oversensitive. Why?
Because they're spineless to the small majority of lunatics that make a lot of noise. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this, and I admire a great deal of professors. I've interviewed a number of them. They're awesome. And thank God for professors, and thank God for our academic hotbeds that you know, come up with all these ideas. But at the same time, a lot of academics are just terrified to make a stand. They're fucking spineless because they live in a very safe and closed environment, and they can't speak common sense a lot of times.
Assholes. But doesn't that lead to what we were talking about earlier? We were talking about what people can tolerate, that people are tough because of the environment that they grow up in. And it's one of the reasons why people don't respect spoiled people.
Right.
It's one of the reasons why people don't respect people who grow up rich. Well, academics to a certain extent are spoiled in the fact that they don't have to compete in the real world.
Of course.
What they do is they exist in a very insulated world where they take classes from people who have also gone through the system, then they become teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they become teachers, then they have this oppressive power over the people in their class. And the people in their class have to listen to their ideology.
But they're also living under oppressive power.
Mm-hmm.
They're living under a protocol, an academic protocol. If you ever try to get an academic to talk about anything that he's not 100% certain about, boy, are they terrified.
Yeah.
And the academic world is about the nastiest place in the world. Talk about a battlefield of ideas. When you come up with an idea that's controversial, like Steven Pinker, who said that human beings are not born a blank slate, or that aggression is rewarded in indigenous cultures. Holy shit, was he lambasted.
Yeah, he got in a lot of trouble, even though there's a lot of science that
of course
backs that up. Look at this Office for Diversity and Inclusion.
Yeah,
and look at the gender binary. He, she, her, him, hers, his, and then gender neutral. They, them, theirs, and then pronunciation as it looks.
Yeah.
But look at this. Look at Z, her, and hers, H-I-R-S, H-I-R, H-I-R-S.
Look at that.
Z-H-E-E, H-E-R-E, H-E-R-E-S. So here's.
Creating a new language.
Z, here, hears. Z, here, hears. These are fucking gender-neutral pronouns that they've invented.
Yeah.
They've invented gender-neutral pronouns. This is insanity.
I don't think that kind of stuff sticks. I think it's just
they're
too
trying,
crazy.
But they're trying. This is college. This is the University of Tennessee.
They're not
at
just
Knoxville.
Trying. They're enforcing. They're born enforcers. If you listen to these people, they are not tolerant people, nor are they nice people.
But
they're
have you seen the woman? Have you seen the woman? The photo of the woman who is running this. It's wonderful.
See.
It's wonderful. She's perfect. It's in the comments of you. If you look at the tweet that I found, it's in my tweet. Somebody posted a photograph of this. Perfect.
She's gigantic.
Yes, of course she is. Of course she is. Of course she's.
She's angry?
I don't know if she's angry. She doesn't have to be angry.
Well, how about the woman who was talking about, there was a girl in college who said that she was trying to push through legislation within the college about microaggression.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to monitor microaggression.
Yes.
So even your facial, mm-hmm. your facial, and this is Orwellian. This is exactly what George Orwell wrote about in 1984, thought crime and face crime. It's alive and well. Human beings love having control over other human beings.
Yep.
It is so, we all have it. I have it. We all have it. If I was emperor of the world, I know exactly what I'd do. I want that power so I can do all kinds of stuff. Because I think, and I'm speaking for myself, I think I'm so fair and I'm so nice that I can make everything better. Never give anybody power.
There you go.
Oh, there you are.
There you go.
There you are. Look at her.
Yeah.
I grew up with this. I went to high school with this shit up in Massachusetts.
Madness.
I know all about it.
It's madness. Because, first of all, I hate to say that. You hate to judge someone based entirely on their appearance. But if someone's morbidly obese, that person does not have good judgment in their own biological management.
Yes,
the management of their
point.
Own body has been grossly inept.
Mismanaged. That's a very interesting way of putting it.
It's the only way to look at it.
She also can't be too happy with herself.
This is not a poor person, okay? This is a person who works at a university, okay? She can't. That's also probably not happy with herself, probably socially awkward, which, you know, no one can fault anyone for those things. The problem is when someone is in that predicament and they're choosing to dictate the rules of engagement that other people have. Because what you're doing by creating all these gender-neutral pronouns and these new words, ways of you're trying to nerf the world. That's what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. You're trying to take away the awkwardness of a boy who looks like a girl being called a girl.
Mm-hmm.
When you're just like, no, I'm a boy. Oh, sorry. Well, fuck, man. You look really close to being a girl. I'm sorry. I'm not
allowed
an asshole.
To say that.
Yeah, but you're not. Okay, or a girl who decides she's a boy and she wants to be referred to as a boy. She wants to be referred to as a he. Well, okay, well, once you tell me that, I'm okay with it. I don't mind. You know, if you say your name is Greg and your real name that you were born with was Donna, it doesn't bother me. I'll call you Greg. It doesn't bother me. But to say that I'm the asshole because something that's completely outside the norm is weird and sticks out, no, that's wrong.
Yes.
You know, like, it's like, I don't like this vitiligo thing that I have on my hands. It's weird. You know, and if I get really tan, then it really shows up. But I'm white, so it's not that bad. But when people go like, what's that on your knuckles? I don't like that I have to tell them. But of course I go, oh, it's vitiligo. It's a disease. I wish I didn't have it.
Right.
But I do have it. So I don't get upset if somebody asks me a question.
Right.
It's a normal question to ask. My knuckles look different than the rest of my hand. It makes sense that they would want to know what's going on. This is not like a microaggression. This is human curiosity at something that's abnormal.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing that it's abnormal.
But
it's not a bad thing
I do think
that there's a gender issue,
yeah.
that you wish you were a woman when you were born a man, or you wish you were a man when you were born a woman. It's not a bad thing. It's just, it is.
There is a difference, though. And I think that what we're experiencing now with the transgender movement, and even to an extent the gay movement, is the pendulum swinging all the way in one direction. And it's a reaction to the fact that, and this is just a fact, when you were a man or a woman and you felt overwhelmingly like you were a different sex and you took measures to correct your current sex, or you just dressed up in a way that made you feel more yourself. So if you're a man and you're dressed in drag or whatever as a woman. Or for that matter, if you were gay and you started having feelings when you were puberty. The problem was that in most of our history, you got the fucking shit kicked out of you.
You got killed.
You got killed.
You got targeted.
You lost your job.
Got ostracized.
Yeah, and
yes.
that anger and that injustice mm-hmm. doesn't go away. And so you have a lot of people that have that memory is very fresh. That
right.
wound is very raw.
So let's have some fake pronouns.
The way to not solve that is then try to control the majority of the population's behavior.
What about Zier? Z-H?
I like that.
E-R-E?
Zier.
They have those.
Zier.
That's one of them.
Yeah, I know. I was in. Listen, I went to high school in Massachusetts. I remember when I had to say I couldn't say freshman. I had to say fresh person.
I dated a girl who graduated from Wellesley College with a degree in women's studies.
Wellesley,
women's studies. It's all about women.
Yeah, I know.
It's wonderful. Good times. She didn't shave her legs.
There was a white girl
I suffered.
I dated a white girl.
You don't even care.
She didn't shave her legs. Yeah, it's very European.
No, it's very hippie, bro.
That's what I mean.
To do with European.
That's what I mean.
It's fine, but her roommate was Greek.
I got in trouble for
Guess what her feet looked like? Bilbo Baggins.
Greek women are hot, though.
Hairy feet, bro.
Really?
She had hairy toes. Hairy feet and
this
hairy
was the
toes.
Girl you were with?
Nope, the other girl, her roommate.
When you're younger, man, you'll fuck a bear. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't give a shit.
No, she was beautiful, but she was blonde. Like, she was a pretty girl. And the roommate.
There was a girl I dated who was a liberal white girl.
Jesus, that's not real.
There was this white girl, and she and she majored in African studies in college. And I went, and all I did was this. I go, why? Because I knew the answer was she was a liberal white girl and just wanted other black people to be like, you're my favorite white. You're my favorite white, and you understand us, and you're down with our cause. I know it wasn't because she was interested in African studies. And
why
then
not?
I said, because I said, why? What about, why did you choose to study African studies? Not that there's anything wrong with it. And not say what you come from, like European history.
Why would you care what she studies, bro?
I just wanted to know the answer.
Okay, what was her answer?
She said,
dicks.
Her answer was,
the best way to get
I
it.
Wish. She wasn't even into black guys. She goes, I find that question offensive. And I said,
whoa.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Why? I find that question offensive.
Because I'm not prejudiced at all. So
but that's a good question. It's a good question if you say, like, I'm a professional poker player. Oh, why?
It's a fair question.
Or how did... Man, maybe you wouldn't say why. Yeah, you wouldn't say why.
But you would say, what
I want to be
what
a professional
like
poker player. Why?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a real question. If you said, I want to be a professional poker player, I would definitely say why.
People ask me if they want to be actors, and I ask them why all the time. Why? What is it about acting that you want? Pay attention to that now.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on.
Right.
Do you want what you see at the awards, or do you really
like
want to be an actor?
Kanye West.
Yeah.
He's not even an actor.
Kanye West and Donald Trump, in my opinion, in many ways, are my least favorite Americans.
How dare you?
No, I'm not talking about the politics or anything else. I just think, and I have a thought about that. I actually think that they would have benefited a great deal, and they're accomplished
people.
Don't
say slavery.
No, they would have been, Donald Trump would have been a great slave. Sir, I think they would have benefited a great deal. Follow me on this line of logic.
Okay, I'm trying.
I don't think they've ever been punched in the face well and hard by somebody who knows how to punch. And here's what I mean.
Mm.
The first time I got punched in the face, I actually got kicked in the head by a black belt, and I got knocked out. It hurt so badly, I fucking renounced God. You know, I was just like,
Did
Satan.
You believe in God before you got
no,
hit?
No, but I mean, in other words, I was like, I thought I was the center of the universe, and I got kicked in the head, and I fell forward. I woke up, and I was like, I quit everything. I want my mom and a warm glass of milk, and I want a nap.
Right.
And it was a seminal moment when I was 18 because I realized I was definitely not the center of the universe, and I was definitely not the tree. I was just a tiny leaf on a very big tree that, you know, could be plucked very easily. It was kind of a profound moment because that kind of pain and that kind of vulnerability where I realized, oh, man, it's easy to kill me. I heard a loud noise.
You don't think Donald Trump has gone through, like, a ton of adversity?
I don't know, but he doesn't act like it.
He acts like a successful guy that's rich as fuck and insulated. That's what he acts like.
Yeah.
And a guy who knows a lot of the people at the top and thinks they're dopes. He acts like a guy who donated a shitload of money to Hillary Clinton's campaign so that she came to his fucking wedding. And she did. And she did. Okay?
I love it.
So when you recognize that, then you kind of understand why he acts the way he acts.
Yeah.
If you walked into a room full of retards.
He just feels like the king.
If you walked into a room full of retards and you had a rifle in your hand and you said, sit the fuck down. I'm running this town now. Okay, because you retards have been out shooting my cows and fucking my dog and lighting my house on fire. Everybody sit the fuck down. Well, in a lot of ways, to a guy like Donald Trump, when he's talking about all these people in Congress that didn't know the difference between the Shia and the Sunni, when he's talking to all these people that did make these decisions based on shitty evidence, when he's talking about all these fucking people that are secretly playing poker on their fucking cell phones and they're making gigantic decisions or jerking off under the table and they get caught, he knows that. He's been around too long. I'm not saying I support him.
I'm not. I hear what you're saying.
I don't like his arrogance. I don't like what he said about Mexicans, especially.
No.
That's so, it's short-sighted and it's neglecting.
It's also bullshit, building a wall around the center. You know,
see, neglecting what's the difference between Mexicans and Americans in the first place. It's just luck.
Yes.
It's luck and opportunity. They're all just human beings that got unlucky. If you were born in fucking Juarez, you would be just like them.
Fuck off. Yes,
you know, exactly. So when he says that
especially
kind of shit.
Especially him.
You got lucky, bitch.
Yeah.
You got lucky you weren't born in Tijuana. If you were, you'd be just like
that. He was born to a father who had a lot of money.
That's right. So, son of a bitch.
No.
But that's why he's like he is.
I do think this. What do you think of this? You know, when we, a big chief concern always in elections is the economy. And I'm always fascinated that we never hire economic studs, guys who actually made a lot of money in the economy and competed. Instead, we hire government bureaucrats. And I don't know what the answer is, but it seems very counterintuitive for voters to vote for, say, a guy like Barack Obama, who actually didn't leave any, he never really worked in the, he was a community organizer. He never had a real job. And then he had kind of okay grades, I think at Occidental, and then I think Columbia. And then he taught at Harvard and left no academic papers or legacy. And then was kind of greased into being a senator and didn't leave any legislative legacy. And you look at the guy and he's a really good speaker and he seems sensible and fair. But it's interesting that we voted for him, and I voted for him, primarily on the idea that he was black and different and sent a good message to the world, or a thousand reasons. But I know I wanted to show the world that we weren't a prejudiced nation after the war, and that we were a progressive group of people, and that Obama did seem really sensible and he seemed fair and he seemed thoughtful. So I'm criticizing myself for this, but I think it makes sense to vote for somebody sometimes. Like, you know, Republicans make it fucking so hard to vote for him. But I just feel like if you really care about the economy, vote for a guy who had to really compete and win in the economy. They might have a better understanding and perspective.
Right. But would they be the best qualified dealing with social issues?
Would they be
the best qualified to deal with international dilemmas?
Well, international probably, but social issues, I think the best way to deal with social issues is to do exactly nothing, maybe.
Do you think that it's possible that the whole idea of being a president is just antiquated? It's all just some alpha male primate monkey shit. We have to have a top dog.
The way our government is organized is fantastic in a lot of ways. In terms of the president still has veto power but needs a 2/3 of the majority.
Well, that didn't stop Congress us from going into the Iraq war, which is what you originally talked about.
Yes. That's true.
And also, if you look at the president, like if he relies on Congress and Congress relies, I mean, all of those laws that are set up in place to make sure that he, you know, doesn't have like ultimate power.
Checks
that he
can.
Well, why is he there in the first place? Why do we have that? Why do we need one person? Why is there supposed to be one captain?
Because ultimately you need one. Ultimately, the responsibility of the president is when you have six different sources, the State Department and the intelligence and all these people coming to you with the options. You do need a decision maker.
Really, one guy? That seems so ridiculous.
It's never one guy. Never one guy, though.
If he really is that good, why would he have Joe Biden as his second guy? Just stop and think about that.
Well, Joe Biden's been in government for a very long time.
When you watch the Joe Biden steroid hearings, when he's talking about steroids, when the congressional baseball hearings.
He's a politician.
He is so silly.
Yes.
He's such a silly man.
He's considered a blowhard by a lot of people on the other side of the aisle.
I mean,
Joe Biden, if you talk to anybody who's been in government a long time, he's kind of a blowhard. I mean, he's a blustery guy.
Silly guy.
Yeah.
He really shouldn't be the top dog for the fucking country, but he's one heartbeat away from being the top dog.
Yeah,
the
vice president has always been what your president allows it to be. So a vice president is typically a ceremonial title where you go to different ceremonies, but it's never been – it's really interesting. It's an interesting role because it can be a very, very sort of amorphous
– vacuous.
Pointless yeah. job. Yeah.
It had been up until Dick Cheney. It's one of the reasons why Dick Cheney snuck in. The yeah. puppet master, he figured out, like, I'll just take this gig that Dan Quayle had, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take this gig that really dumb motherfuckers had,
yeah. you
know, except Al Gore. Al Gore was pretty well-respected, smart guy.
He was respected in some circles, but Al Gore never had much of a backbone. Al Gore was always criticized for never really having a strong position on much. So,
but if you look at a guy like a Barack Obama, what he's like is like a really strong headliner that takes a shitty opening act with him on the road. You know? Because if you listen to Joe Biden talk, and you know, he's okay, it's all right.
Yeah.
It's not offensive to your ears.
Yeah.
He's not a terrible speaker. But then Obama's so good.
He's so good.
So powerful.
He makes everything seem so yeah. comfortable.
He's such a good talker.
Yeah, but he also, at the end of the day, I think, you know, he says he's a big free market guy, but I think Obama really does believe in top-down authority. I do think he really believes that ultimately a central group of smart people should be making most of the decisions. I feel that from him.
Well, anybody who watches fucking Storage Wars should think that. Watch Naked and Afraid. You don't want to stop these people from making the critical decisions about this war, this world's fucking future.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just have everybody.
No.
I mean, no. That's a terrible thing to say.
No, but you can certainly have top-down. You need a federal government, my God, for certain things.
Right, but
you
ultimately,
also need...
isn't the Electoral College, ultimately, isn't that a really fucking scary thing? That
you can decide
that there's a representative of the state. So the state votes for a representative.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll tell you what the good side of it is.
What?
It means that states that have very small populations aren't ignored.
Right.
And like, that's why they go to Iowa. Right now, that's something that you need.
That's why the politicians go to Iowa,
yeah.
right?
There's an intelligent argument to get rid of the Electoral College.
They
for sure.
fucking dust these farmers off. They sit them down and they say a bunch of bullshit to them.
Well, that's
because
the campaign starts there.
And also because they can't read, yeah. so they just listen.
No. And then that's a mistake. A lot of farmers are super smart.
Dude, they don't read at all.
No,
they're
man.
They're too busy.
No, man, you're
they're
reading propaganda.
They're planting grain. They're picking corn all day.
God,
they don't have any time for reading.
Those farmers are actually, most of those farmers are smart.
Well, you have to be. Look, it's a very tight business.
Yeah.
Like, your margins are
Oof.
Very small.
Oof.
And also, there's weirdness, like subsidies. Like, wait a minute.
Huge
like,
subsidies.
If it wasn't for subsidies, there's a lot of farms that would be done.
Of course.
A long time ago.
And guess who benefits from subsidies? Huge
corporations.
Factory farms.
Yeah. Huge factory farms, corporations, and the corn industry. There's a fucking fantastic documentary called King Corn.
It's
fucking nuts, man.
Yeah.
These guys, they set out, I mean, I've mentioned it several times in the podcast, so I apologize if you heard this before, but if you haven't seen it, just check it out. This guy, they did do like an analysis of their own bodies and find out what percentage they are of corn, some ridiculous percentage
yeah.
of all the carbon in their body has come from corn.
Yeah.
And then they go through the aisles of the supermarkets and they start looking at the corn syrup and corn starch and corn this and corn that, and you realize how much fucking corn is in everything.
And huge lobbying efforts in Congress.
And not good for you.
No.
Not.
No.
God damn, it makes a steak good, though.
Yeah.
Do you prefer a grass-fed steak?
I like grass-fed steak only because I just believe they're ruminants. I've been told that they're supposed to eat grass, so I like things that are more natural. I don't know if
they're
it tastes
darker.
Better. I don't know if it tastes better, but for me it does because my mind says, this is grass-fed. I'm going to be healthier.
They're different. I wouldn't say I prefer grass, but there's something about a really nice fatty corn-fed ribeye that I understand.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
100%.
Some of it's really good, but it's not good for the animal. That's for fuck sure. And it's darker meat, and I gotta feel like darker meat is better for you. I know that's probably not logical. But
well, the way a cow eats the way it's biologically supposed to, I'd imagine that it's probably better for you.
Well, I feel like that about eggs. You know, sometimes my chickens, I leave them in the chicken house. It's a big fucking chicken house. Just had a chicken die the other day. For no reason. They just die.
They just die.
They just die.
Chickens don't live long.
Well, I don't know how long they live.
Their little chicken hearts give
but
out.
There's nothing happened to it. It was in the coop. And the coop, I call it a coop, but it's really a chicken house. It's big.
Did you check its back for peck marks?
They did peck it. They pecked it as soon as it went down. They're fucking cannibals, those monsters.
Did they eat it?
They would eat it.
Wow.
They pecked at it, but it wasn't dead for very long before we found it. Point being, when I don't let them out, their eggs don't taste as good. Their eggs look different. Their eggs become more yellow. Mm. And I buy the best chicken food that you can buy, the healthiest chicken food that you could buy. But really, they want a free range. And when you let them go, and then they run around the yard, and they peck grass, and they eat bugs, their eggs are much more delicious.
Sure.
And they're a dark, dark yolk.
Yeah.
There's a like the other day, I took a photo because I had eggs, and two of them were from an egg from when they were grazing, and two were from a little bit later when we had them in the coop for a few days. And when they're in that coop, their fucking eggs come out yellow, like supermarket eggs. Not wow. quite that yellow,
yeah.
but pretty close. Whereas otherwise, they're a dark, dark orange, and they literally taste different. I gotta think they're more nutritious. I mean, it only makes sense.
They certainly taste better. Your eggs, I've had eggs from your coop.
They're amazing, right?
The Joe Rogan eggs?
Yeah.
Delicious.
You get them the day of. Like, yeah. I get them in the morning, and then I cook them. I'll have, like, an egg sandwich for breakfast. Damn. On some
sprouted chickens, man.
Bread, some Ezekiel bread.
Ooh, Ezekiel's good stuff.
With jalapeno. I like to take the jalapeno. It's slicey.
Ha.
And then I take some El Yucateca or maybe some sriracha occasionally.
So good.
And I put it over sriracha. The fucking sliced jalapenos.
Oh.
I double down. Jalapeno. With a little mayonnaise. I'm not scared of mayonnaise, bro.
No, don't be afraid of mayonnaise.
I'm not scared. I put a little swath.
Oh.
Fucking work out.
If you wanted to torture right my wife, mayonnaise. You'd give her mayonnaise and onions mixed in. She'd throw up immediately.
She doesn't like either one of those
things?
I
like myself some mayonnaise. She can't look at mayonnaise.
Really?
What do you have a food that you just can't eat?
No, I'm a man.
Jesus.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Okay.
Would you eat brains? I don't have any weird phobias. I've eaten brains before.
Not me.
I've eaten lamb's brains.
I won't eat tongue or brains.
Really?
I'm not crazy about kidney and stuff.
Why is that?
It's just I don't like the
texture of tongue.
Yeah.
Jews know how to make the tongue.
Yeah.
Kosher tongue?
Ugh.
A cow tongue?
Ugh.
Never had it? No?
No. I did have it as a kid. And I said, this looks like a tongue. And my grandfather said, it's not a tongue. And I go, it looks like tongue. I was in Greece. And I ate it. And I was like, fucking tongue.
And it
Liars.
Was tongue. God
yeah.
damn it.
I never ate it again.
When we were in Montana and we ate that deer skull, you didn't eat any of that deer tongue? When they chopped
no,
up the deer tongue?
But I ate eyeball. I ate, remember when I ate?
Yeah.
Steve gave me the fat behind the eyeball that was mm-hmm. raw and I ate that.
Yeah. What was that called again? Tallow?
Yeah.
Tallow, yeah.
Yeah. That it tastes so chewy.
Chewy. Yeah, I didn't eat it. I saw you eating it. It was disgusting.
That
I'm
was
like,
when
I'm
I did the
stupid.
Ravine Comer, and then I ate... Yeah.
The Ravine Comer makes me sad to this day.
Yeah.
Because one of the funniest things that happened on the trip with Brian and I when we went to Montana with Steve Rinella and crew is that Brian created a character called the Ravine Comer.
Where I was going to come in a ravine.
There's only been a few times in my life where I almost blacked out from laughing. And that was one of them. But you're never going to see it.
No.
You're never going to see it because that's fucking good old-fashioned outdoorsman, sportsman's channel. Jesus, and we're out there hunting.
Well, part of it's like I like to
There's
do it to guys like
land.
Steve Rinella and Dan Doty who don't know what to do when I go, hey, is anybody using this ravine? If not, I'm going to cum in it. You might have a cum in the ravine.
Well, you started getting angry
yes.
and yelling at
it. And then I jacked off. I mock jacked
and
off. I didn't really jack off.
Kept talking about being the ravine comer, and you had to be there. But the point being is like a lot of our ridiculous silliness will never make it on his show.
No.
So we're doing this amazing performance for like you're doing it more than I am. I'm not that kind of you're a different kind of on than I am,
yeah.
you know, when we go to these things. It's one of the reasons why I love having you around is because you just love making everybody laugh. You love making me laugh
it's
too.
My favorite thing in the world.
Yeah, you're just ridiculous.
This weekend,
with it.
I made somebody laugh for 1 hour. The groom of the wedding, and this is so sick. But I made him laugh. I've never made anybody laugh that hard for what I did an hour of material, and it was all his son is a really good looking 17-year-old, a wrestler, really muscular and really smooth.
Oh, this is us. We're turkey hunting. Is this
That's a short clip from.
Oh, play it. Let's play it.
Hold on, my story, please.
Play it. Let's hear it. Wonky ass Sportsman's Channel Network. Well, let's let it load up. We had to just leave it right there. We had a good fucking time though, man. It was a good time.
It was a good time.
Turkey hunting though is for the birds.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with turkey hunting. And if you love turkey hunting, I appreciate it. Absolutely. I get it. I I shot a turkey. We ate some of it. It was delicious.
Tastes just like turkey.
Yeah, I don't get this.
I like to call them in, but trying to locate them and not having any idea where they are, hoping that they come.
I was asleep and snoring, and Steve Rinella was like, "You're sleeping." I was like, "No, I wasn't." Like lying down snoring, but when you wake me up, I will fucking tell you I wasn't sleeping automatically.
Yeah, what is it about that? It's like that vulnerable feeling, like I'm awake.
It's embarrassing. I was sure that I was awake.
Man, I slept nine hours last night. I slept nine hours and I kept it a secret from my wife. My wife goes, "Where were you?" I go, "I was in the garage." I lied to her. I go, "I was working out in the." I was sleeping for 2 hours, and I lied. I lied right to her. Like I was like, "I was in my office working out."
We need a hunting show where we do it online with nobody sponsoring it. Nobody like we do it the same way we have done with podcasts.
Yeah,
we need that. I need to just finance it, and I'll just hire some dude to just film us. We'll take someone like Ryan Callahan or something like that, take us hunting somewhere, and we'll just film it.
How much could it possibly cost? I don't know.
I mean, how much could it really possibly cost? If we just had like a sponsor, like rifles that we use or, you know, products that we use like Hoyt bows or something like that, just a sponsor that could help us defer some of the costs of production. It would be so much fun because these trips, like the trip that we had when we went out to Alaska and we went on to Prince Edward Island, fucking fantastic time. Horrible rains. What we were talking about earlier with like fun. That's like fun while you're doing it.
13 hours in your tent alone.
It was terrible. Like we were soaking wet the entire trip. It never stopped raining. If it would stop, it would stop for like 20 minutes. Then we'd shoot like some video footage of us being out there for 20 minutes looking for deer that we never found.
Right.
And then it would go right back to raining. It was horrible. But we had so many fucking laughs. Just the time that we were in the trailer, or the tent, rather.
It's the greatest.
And we had one indication of that is the podcast that we did from there.
Mm-hmm.
Steve's podcast, which was one of the best ones that we did. You know, one of Steve's that we did, where it's not censored. Like, unlike the show, it's completely free. So we're there.
I got to listen to that.
Laughing. We were giving him so much shit about his shit collection.
Yeah.
Remember, Steve Rinella he's so fucking into wildlife. This dude had a stool collection of all the various animals that he had hunted. He had like bear shit, duck shit.
You can show Steve a picture of shit in the wild and he'll be like, that's raccoon.
I did. I told him there was a fucking animal that was trying to get in my chicken coop and it shit in my yard. I sent him a picture of it and he said it was a skunk.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
there was a fucking skunk
a
out
skunk.
There. These cunty skunks. Skunks will kill the fuck out of your chickens.
Really?
Skunks are predators.
No. They are?
Yep. Yeah. Skunks are predators.
That's amazing. They'll eat birds.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Especially chickens. They were trying to get to my chickens.
How about raccoons?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah. Raccoons would definitely.
If you're a forest grouse, you better run.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do ground nesting birds? Any ground
nesting
birds?
Well, that's what they said about turkeys. Everybody's trying to kill turkeys all the time.
It's true.
Turkeys die all the time.
Yeah.
A 3-year-old turkey's old.
Well, when we were turkey hunting, we shot a turkey. Oops. Spoiler alert. But we only shot one. It was a young, stupid turkey. It's called a Jake. I shot it.
Yeah.
And on Brian's day, when I was snoring, Brian couldn't fucking find a turkey. We couldn't find a turkey.
Told me crazy.
We did rock, paper, scissors. I won, so I got to shoot first.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, what we should have done, we both should have shot at the same time because three fucking turkeys came in.
Yeah.
We should have said, let's do this on the count of three. We could have both had turkeys.
Just blast.
But we thought, since that was the first day, we're like, oh, we're going to see a bunch of turkeys. This is awesome.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. No, it was a bunch of times sitting around in Napa Valley, okay? We're not pretending we're in Alaska.
No.
We're not in the far. We went to eat at fantastic restaurants every night.
Yeah. I want to be at Bouchon.
Those dummies, they fucking ate cheeseburgers and shit. I'm like, come on, I'll take you to the restaurant. I'm going to pay. Let's go.
Unbelievable.
Like, we're going to go back to the house and drink beer.
Best food in the world.
Literally the best restaurants in the world. And Rinella never joined us once.
Oh, incredible. Fuck.
He likes to pretend he's in the woods. He doesn't like the fact that he gets to stay in a house when he hunts.
Oh, I know.
He wants to suffer.
He wants to live in the dirt.
So the fact that we were going to go and drink fine wine and eat duck.
We ate grilled
duck and filet mignon.
Uh-huh.
There was a potato puree. It
took me a half hour to find the wine I wanted. I love that.
Wonderful place.
Yeah.
But we treated it differently than them. They did not want to admit that they were staying in a house in Napa Valley while they were doing that show. They're pretending that they're out there in the woods turkey hunting. You're in a guy's yard. You're in a guy's yard, and you're shooting a fucking bird that I could buy down the store. And here's the problem. He fucked up when he cooked his turkey breast. Because you know what that turkey breast tastes
just
like?
Just like the stuff I buy at the store.
Yeah, like fucking turkey breast!
No difference.
No goddamn difference.
I was like, oh, this is going to be the best turkey in the world.
No.
Wow.
Nope. Pretty fucking boring.
You guys stay here. I'll go to the deli and have the same experience.
And, you know, I guess the legs taste a little better. I need to cook. Come over this week, man, and I'll cook some turkey and some moose.
All right.
Because the turkey that we shot, I have that
all
still.
Right,
I have most of it except
for around tomorrow.
We ate one breast. One breast. Let's do it tomorrow. We ate one fucking breast while we were there. And we were like, okay. Tastes like he made schnitzel. You know, like
after I do my podcast called The Fighter and the Kick.
What was it? I heard that show was picked up by Fox. Some crazy deal.
You guys get some
crazy deal with Fox Sports.
How about this? We sold out.
Whoa! I'm waiting for someone to come along with enough money for me to sell out.
Dude, we sold the brand.
Oh, you mean a show?
We
Sorry.
Sold the live podcast out 6 weeks in advance.
Of course you did.
At the Bray Improv. And by the way, everybody, Tempe Improv, November 12th.
Wait,
we're going to do a live podcast.
I think I'm on your live podcast.
In Tempe?
What day is the one you did in...
October 1st.
On that fucker?
Yeah, you're more than welcome to.
I'm on that podcast.
Are you kidding?
I think I'm going to be on it.
That'd be great.
We're going to have a good time. We're going to do it high as fuck, though.
We're going to get...
I'm tired of you guys talking sober.
Hey, man, come on.
Really?
Don't push your drugs on me.
It bothers me.
I think I'm going to get Brennan to do some stand-up.
He definitely should do stand-up.
Yeah. At the live podcast, I want him to do 3-4 minutes.
He should do it. He could do it on...
Every time
fighting
I do
in the UFC. He could definitely do it on Dating Rhonda, but he shouldn't. Tell him not to.
He won't.
No.
No, he doesn't. He's tired of taking shit for just saying anything.
Yeah, let it go, man.
He said that yesterday on the podcast. He goes, just so you know, I am never talking about that shit again. He's just so sick
of
it.
He can't. No. She's the queen of the world. You got to let it go. She's bigger than Oprah.
But he has let it go. He's never said a bad thing about her in his life.
Well, he does love her. He does care about her.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
I've never heard that guy say one thing besides that she's great. And I'm not even proud.
Well, there was the one time on the podcast where he said that he's too much of a man.
He meant with Rhonda, it's either you are going to be taking a back seat to she's driving the train, or you need the extreme opposite. That's what I think he was trying to say. He didn't mean too much. He's just not. He's a strong personality. She's a strong personality. That tends to be hard to mesh. But anyway, come see us November 12th. Change the subject.
I like how you wanted to keep going.
November 12th, ladies and gentlemen, Tempe Improv.
So listen,
live
man,
Fighter and the Kid.
What you and I really need to do is we need to do a show where it's just us doing whatever the fuck we want to do.
Yeah.
And turn it into funny. It's like I'll be your audience. I come with you. We'll do things together. Most of it is like me setting you up. Like most of the meat eater show, the fun stuff is me setting you up and you knocking it out of the park.
Great.
Over and over and over again.
Great.
But we have a weird dynamic. It's really funny. And Ranella, we talked about it before. Like we were really bored at one time. He goes, I wish Callan was here right now. I go, yeah, if he was here, it would be like really fun. He goes, no offense. I go, no, it's not. I'm not funny like that. I'm a different. I mean, I occasionally I'm funny like that, but not like you can't count on it.
No, I'm a jackass. I only have fun when I'm being a jackass like that. I'm looking for any opening. You're talking. I'm not even listening. I'm like, where's an opening? I can give a fuck what you're saying.
Isn't that a problem when you're doing a podcast,
though? Of course. Of course, a problem with my life. I'm never serious.
But it's not necessarily a problem when we do stuff like that.
Fucking works for stand-up.
Yeah, it definitely works for stand-up. Yeah. But it also works for doing that hunting thing. We got to talk to Ranella about that.
Let's do it.
Say, listen, because I briefly talked to him and his company. We talked about me doing a show, and I was really considering it, but... First of all, there's a lot of shit that I take from hunting that for no reason. It's so silly. I take it from people that have dogs and cats on their fucking Instagram page. I got into it with this lady. She's a very nice lady. She's a tattoo artist. She gave me a hard time about calling hunting ethically retarded or something like that. And then I went to her page and she's got animals. And I'm like, come on. You feed your animals murdered animals. It's the only way you're going to keep them things alive. If you have dogs and a cat, what do you feed them? She admitted. She goes, yes, it's like a necessary evil. And, you know, it was a very friendly exchange because she had beautiful artwork. She's a really talented tattoo artist. But I go, come on, this is silly. Like, you're not getting this from the dog food tree. You're
getting it from horse meat and things like that.
Well, from that and from cows and byproducts and guts and feet and all kinds of shit that they grind up, and lamb, which is basically baby sheep.
Yeah.
The chickens, they fucking grind chickens up and compress them into cat food. I mean, that's what it is. And those animals are not happy, and they're a real living thing. If I shoot a moose or whatever the fuck I shoot, I'm eating that whole goddamn thing, and it's one animal, and that's one of the things that I like about hunting a large animal like that as opposed to like a turkey. If you shoot a turkey, it's only going to live, it's only going to feed like a few people. Like a turkey will feed five people.
Yeah.
Like that turkey we shot, five people we can have in a meal.
Yeah.
And it's over.
But it's also this. I mean, you know, what I always say is even trophy hunting, which I don't do, but even trophy hunting, is the revenue from those kinds of hunts.
I honestly hate that argument. And I really want to talk to hunters about not using it. Because it's true. It is true. But it's so fucked up that it's true. That it's more...
It's just economy. It's economics.
Yeah, it is economics, but it's... Here's the deal, right? If you love something, whether it's elephants or rhinos, you love some exotic, crazy animal that we don't have in North America, and you want to pay a lot of money to shoot it, and you're not even going to eat it. I guess they do eat elephants, which I didn't know. Started getting into hunting. But I guess it tastes good, man. Mm. It's fucked because they're intelligent and they're not traditionally thought of
family structures and all that.
Great memories. Yeah. They remember family members from like 20 years ago. They reunite them. They hug. Like it's trippy, man. I've seen a video of a mother and a child reunited after 20 years and they're hugging. Like, we don't think anything of a child leaving a family because that's what we do. Mm. You know, if you live with your family and you're 40, you're a fucking loser.
Yeah.
But if you're an elephant and you're you know, you have children, those children stay near you. Mm-hmm. It's like the structure. That's their natural structure. We don't think anything of like separating them, taking them off here, taking them off there. It's one of the most damning things about something like SeaWorld. Like that they have the balls to have these commercials where they say, we haven't taken an animal from the wild in 35 years. That's like a human having slaves saying, we haven't kidnapped this person from their family in another country in 35 years. Mm. So this is okay that we keep these slaves. Because that's what an orca is. When an orca or a dolphin, they're fucking slaves.
I didn't see blackfish because I find it too upsetting.
It'll drive you crazy.
Yeah.
It'll drive you crazy. It doesn't matter what they say. There's no getting away from the fact those animals are captive.
They go into psychosis.
Yes. There's all sorts of problems with them, but there's just no getting away from the fact they're captive. You're not talking about a dog, man. My dog got upset today because I was on the other side of the fence and I was having a phone call. And he's pawing at the door. He wants to get to me. Come on, man. Hang out with me.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I'm on the phone. I'll pet you in a minute. Right now I'm on the phone. And he has you see my dog's yard. It's giant. It's an acre.
He just wants to be part of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And they don't want to be captive. They want to be free to do whatever they want.
Yes.
And this is a dog who lives in a family. I mean, he's one of the family.
Domesticated, you know? Animal, too.
He's domesticated. Yeah. He's a sweetie. He's one of the family, you know? He lives in the house. He sleeps in the house.
Yeah.
He's just outside doing his thing. And he doesn't like it. Let me out, bitch. Come on. What is this?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the madness if you were a person and you were forced to live in an empty tank or an empty swimming pool. Like, imagine if you in the same structure where an orca lives, that's your world.
How much room do they have?
Not much at all. You know what's really terrifying? There's a photo of the SeaWorld parking lot. It shows the parking lot, and it shows where the orca enclosure is in relationship to the size of the parking lot. It's fucking terrifying. It's terrifying.
Yeah, you just feel claustrophobic.
Tiny little thing.
It.
Just imagine if you had to live in a drained pool.
It's a form of torture.
It is a form of torture.
It's solitary confinement.
Well, and you know, the really crazy animal rights activists believe that you shouldn't own any pets, that I shouldn't even have my dog. I shouldn't have my cats.
Dogs especially are domesticated. There's a difference between a wild animal that's tame and a domesticated animal.
Well, my cat's pretty fucking domesticated.
Yeah, I don't know if you've
seen Fluffette? this fucking ragdoll? In the morning, okay, we have to be really quiet. Because the cat will hear your voice and start meowing at the door. Meow, meow.
Just to come in and
meow,
get pet.
Meow. And you see her. As soon as you see her, she's like... She immediately starts purring.
Because she wants coos. To pet her.
Oh, yeah. She wants you to pick her up. She goes limp. Yeah. I mean, it's the most domesticated animal ever.
Yeah.
Anybody that wants that poor thing to fend for itself is a fucking crazy person. Yeah. This is a baby.
The dogs are pack animals too. Dogs want to be. I imagine cats have a pride, but mm-hmm. dogs definitely want to be part of.
My cats. I have the male and the female. I had a cat just die. She was 13 years old. It's pretty sad. Mm-hmm. Or not 13. Excuse me. She was 19 years old when she died.
It's a long time.
But the other one is 7, and the baby, the new one, is 10 months old, I guess. Maybe 11 months old now. Yeah. I think she was born in October. So she's a fucking baby still, and she's like this little fluffy fur ball. It's like the difference between her and an animal in the wild is so far removed, so many generations, that it's really odd that we do that to those things.
Yeah.
You know, they make awesome pets, but it's really odd that we choose
cats,
to make like an English bulldog.
Yeah, that's
something
playing with genetics. With
and
breathing.
This fucking flat face. You ever see him try to breathe? Like,
yeah.
They overheat. I'm like, what did we do?
Yeah.
Or someone, it's not me and you. What did someone do that made that thing?
Well, they just played with genes. That whole movement happened. When was that? In the 1920s or...
Where we
started changing dogs?
Well, I think they've done it
eugenics.
Like to a certain extent through the history of dog breeding. I think it's existed for a long time, but not to the level that they've done now where they make like Pekingese and these special breeds. And I saw a guy the other day that had two wolves. He was walking. Are you reading tweets? Shut that goddamn phone off.
I was actually going to go to.
Don't you dare.
To see, to look that up, that other thing we were talking about.
Thought you were reading tweets.
No.
It looked like tweets to me.
No, tweets,
you fuck.
Please.
This guy was walking down the street. There's the SeaWorld parking lot. It's in the green. See
oh
that?
Oh, my God.
The green is the tank, and the rest is the parking lot.
Oh, my God.
That's the orca enclosure.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrific.
Wow.
So this guy was walking with wolves. He had pet wolves, and you could tell right away. It was really weird. They were really cool, though. God, they're beautiful.
They lope.
They're fucking horrifying. They're horrifying, but they're beautiful. The wolves to me are like this amazing creature that is, you know, I respect them deeply. I love like what they represent. I love looking at them, but they feel like a trap, man. I think the love that some people have for animals and this really distorted perception of what a predator like a wolf truly is has allowed people to import these things and put them into Idaho and all these different areas. And I'm reading all these stories about what's going on now, how they're decimating the elk populations and people really terrified of them. And when I was in British Columbia and I was up there with my friend Mike, who has a business up there, a guide business, and he has a farm. His fucking neighbors, they had a cow that was killed in the middle of the night by wolves.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they came in and killed a cow.
Sure.
Like, 20 of them.
The problem with wolves is that you talk to any farmer, any rancher, why do they hate wolves? And this is the world over. Wolves have, like in Sweden, they're reintroducing the wolves. It's really controversial because the people that make their living off their livestock, fucking wolves are such efficient killers.
Yeah.
And keeping them out is basically, it's really, really hard.
They're so smart, too.
Yes.
They're so smart. They act together.
There's a reason that farmers traditionally went after wolves right away. Like, whether it was in Italy, in Sweden, anywhere. There's no real society that didn't go after wolves because they were so devastating to your crops.
But
we've
gone so far away from recognizing that and remembering that people have brought these things back in some sort of a weird attempt to balance the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And when they open hunting seasons, there's all these protests. And the protests are almost invariably from people that live in the cities.
Yes.
That's the issue with the difference of Vancouver and British Columbia being a province.
Yeah.
Like, the people in Vancouver, they're all liberal. It's a beautiful place to live. There's no wolves here, man. Don't go killing wolves. But the people who live where you can kill as many wolves a day as you want.
Yeah, because you can never get rid of all.
Exactly.
They're really hard to find. They're elusive.
I ran into this guy at the airport, and he was a really smart guy. Really smart guy, really articulate guy up in Canada. And asked me a question. You know, what are you here for? Blah, blah, blah. I forget what he told me his business was. I probably wouldn't say it anyway to somehow or another people would figure out who he is. But he was talking to me about his business. We were talking a little bit, and he asked me what I was up here for. And I told him I was up there for a hunting trip. And then he started talking to me about how much he hunts wolves.
Ooh.
like right away, he goes into this, yeah, we hunt wolves all the time. And he goes, you got to. I own a piece of property up there, and we've seen them chase down calves and kill them. He goes, we've seen it. He goes, we've seen the wolves. He goes, there's so many of them that what we do is they take garbage bales, like a big garbage pail, and they fill it with meat, and then they pour water into the garbage pail. So it's filled to the top with water and meat. Then they freeze it. And once they freeze it, then they take it and they put it out like a popsicle.
Wow.
And then the wolves can't take it all at once, so they'll definitely keep coming to it. So they get a little bit of the meat, and they'll come back for more, and they've got to chew through the ice, and there's meat inside the ice, and then they'll shoot them.
Oh.
And he said, he goes, we shoot them all year long. We have to shoot them as many as we can.
I've heard the
what a different reality, man.
The Inuit used to take, because wolves were such a nightmare for them. They'd steal their food, their seal at night and stuff, and they would put a razor blade, like a knife with a piece of meat on it, and the wolf would eat the meat and then lick the blade
and cut themselves up
and
die.
Just bleed that
yeah.
way.
They would, they would put blood on a
keep licking their own blood
on a knife, razor sharp knife. Yeah, yeah, it's terrifying. Oof. What a crazy
harsh.
Way to die.
A well, harsh way to live.
That's those worlds, man. That's those worlds. I really think that a certain amount of struggle, like you said, a certain amount of losing makes you more humble and respectful. And like what you were talking about, where a guy like Donald Trump, this sort of conversation is all coming around in this one
That's
thing.
What we do here.
Yeah. But it really is in this one. It's like, and what we're talking about academia, about the cowardice of this new way of pushing
reality,
ideology.
Objective reality. Yeah. Feeling something, hitting a wall is very important.
And they're thought bullies. There's thought bullies about it. And where's that all coming from? Well, I mean, it really is coming from there's a lack of real world experience and a lack of adversity. Mm-hmm. The adversity has only been intellectual diversity. So there's these conversations they're having, the battles that are going on, they're about ridiculous shit. They're not about survival. Mm-mm. They're about calling someone Z or he, and there's anger, and there's rhetoric, and there's protests. And there's just like, there's this crazy need to control what the other people think and what is acceptable and not acceptable on my fucking campus. Have you ever seen the Toronto protests?
Like somebody's sensibility mm-hmm. is sacred.
Have you ever seen the Toronto protests where these feminists, there was some guy who was promoting something that had to do with men's rights. They completely distorted what he had to say, completely distorted what his message was, and promoted him as this like evil person who supported rape and hated women.
I'm sure.
And so they shut down his performance that by turning on a fucking fire alarm. They set off a fire alarm and all cheered. They were protesting in the hallways while this guy's on stage speaking.
Sure. No, that's not surprising. It's a hostile act. It's a controlling act. It's
right.
exactly what the Red Guard did in Mao's China. And there are 1,000 examples of people who get swept away with an ideology.
Mm-hmm.
These are very religious people. And by that, I mean they're fanatically devoted to what they think is a certain truth or set of truisms. And they'll do whatever they can.
Well, that's why
their agenda
it's important what you're saying, because they'll do whatever they can to, but what it's not based on is reality. So, like, if there really was a person that was at this campus that was promoting raping women and doing horrible things to them, and this is what you should do, and he's trying to rally them up, absolutely everyone agrees they should be treated the way these women were treating that guy. The question is, is what he's promoting that, or are you turning it into that in order to make it justifiable for you to go fucking crazy? Because that's what a lot of it is.
I think so.
What a lot of it is, people decide they have a target and then justify their actions based on that.
Also, they
decide
point their
that there's
guns,
a target.
They shoot their guns at the wrong target because it's an easy target.
But that's an important point, though. In their defense, I mean, if someone really is promoting rape, fuck that guy, right?
Right.
So that would be a realistic reason to use that target for what
sure.
they're saying to it. So they make him that.
Yeah.
They distort what he is, and they turn him into that, so then it's justifiable.
Yes.
And the women were screaming at these men that were trying to go in and listen. All they wanted to do was hear what this guy had to say. Screaming at them.
Yeah.
You fucking piece of shit. You support rape. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But this anger and violence and vitriol.
It gives them a cause.
Exactly.
People want a cause.
There's no adversity.
They want to feel like they're revolutionaries. There is no adversity. There's
not
enough adversity.
Healthy.
Yeah.
It's not healthy.
It's also not.
Like
it's not honest. I don't think they're being honest with themselves or with what the real problem is. And that's another issue, is that if you're too ideological and religious, you're going to be placing your energy and your anger in the wrong direction. And there are real challenges and problems.
Yeah.
And it takes sober thought, sober analysis, and an open mind to finding out and developing a very informed point of view, so that then you can actually tackle what's really going on. So,
and good luck finding someone else who's also taking the same amount of consideration into a subject and hasn't approached it with some intense bias.
Exactly.
So having these debates with these people, it's like there's bridges you can't cross. There's things that you can't say.
Well, this is very important, though. Now, when you have a debate, and I'll give you an example. It's very important, in my opinion. The problem with debate in this country is this. Let's take gun control as an example. The first thing you hear is, I'm in favor of guns. I'm in favor of gun control. But what you actually hear when they start the debate is this. You're a gun nut, and I don't like you. You're a hippie liberal, and you don't know what this country was founded on. And that's where we start. And the minute that happens, there is no way anybody's going to have a discussion, because it starts with, I don't like you. Oh, yeah, I don't like you. Instead of saying, hey, guys, we're both good people who have a different point of view, and we're trying to solve a problem. Nobody in this room thinks that somebody should be allowed to go in and massacre a school or a movie theater. We know we want to solve that problem. Now, this side believes everybody should have guns. This side believes they shouldn't. Where is the middle ground? Let's have a real discussion. It never starts that way, unfortunately. A lot of times it just becomes this crazy sort of, this is my camp, this is my idea, and I'm more interested in being right based on my ideology that's immovable.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to kind of step back and be sober in these thoughts, in these situations. For example, like gun control is interesting, because when this guy came up and shot these two reporters, and this psychiatrist...
just happened recently.
Yeah,
right?
And this psychiatrist, his name is Lieberman, Jeff Lieberman, and I think he's out of Columbia University. He said something really interesting.
Probably a black guy, right?
He was a black guy.
Lieberman?
Yes, Jeff Lieberman, no.
He's a Jew, right?
Yes, he's Jewish.
I knew it.
You guessed. Good guess. But he had something really interesting to say, and it was a really interesting debate I'd never heard before. He said, look, mental illness, there is an idea that maybe if somebody is exhibiting psychotic behavior and talking about wanting to hurt other people and himself, a lot of people who have mental illness are not willing to take their drugs because they don't think there's anything wrong with them. So how do you deal with that? Well, he said, What about in some instances outpatient care that is mandated? And we're like, wait a minute, that steps on my civil rights. You can't tell me to take drugs. And he said, but wait, if you have tuberculosis, you are mandated by the Center for Disease Control to take your drugs because you're contagious. And you're not allowed to not take antibiotics when you have tuberculosis. And usually it's a 9-month regimen. It can turn you colorblind like it did my buddy Jimmy Burke and all that. But what about those questions? What about stuff that kind of throws things in the air? Hey, you just filled me with a cloud of whatever.
I'm trying to give you contact. Now,
those are important questions to raise, man.
They are. I didn't know Jimmy Burke went colorblind.
Yeah, from his antibiotic regimen.
Fuck.
Yeah, he's colorblind now.
And what is that from? What disease was it?
He had tuberculosis.
And so it just the antibiotics just killed it forever.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, but he had to take them. So what do you think? If somebody's saying, I want to kill people,
yeah,
and he's just saying
it. That's a mental
it,
illness, and I think it is a good idea to treat it as it is an illness. And the problem with the mental illness stigma, and Cara Santamaria, who's been on this podcast a bunch of times, she's a neuroscientist, she's very smart, and she's had mental illness issues herself with depression, which is also a mental illness.
Yeah.
It's not well. We treat them differently than we treat any other illness. Like there's no shame in having diabetes. You know, we find out that you have a disease, and we don't go, psh, you
right,
got fucking diabetes, bro.
Exactly.
Like, it's a disease, so we treat it with medicine. You know, same thing with virtually every disease except mind diseases. And when someone has a mind disease, we automatically assume that they're being weak. We automatically put them into this box. Oh, you're depressed? Oh, poor fucking baby. Think you're going to be fine, dude?
Yeah.
What are you going to be? You're happy you're not fucking born in the 1600s.
Yeah.
You know, there's all the nonsense that comes with people admitting that there's a chemical imbalance in their brain, which we can't really measure. That's the problem. They can't just pull the juice out of your brain and measure you for depression. You know, and they can't really measure, like, there's no, like, scale that shows what drug is going to work for you.
Right.
Which is one of the weirdest things about taking antidepressants. But whatever the case, it's some form of medication for a disease. And when someone doesn't want to take that medication, this is one of the episode I was talking about called Elements on Radiolab that was talking about lithium. Mm. This woman who can't take this medication anymore. When she takes it, she's her. It is a mental illness. She has a mental illness, being bipolar. It's an absolute disease. And when she takes this stuff, she's totally normal.
Mm.
So this idea that we have about medication when it comes to mental illness, I think it's the one illness that we have this, like, criticism of or this prejudice of that we can justify.
Because it's hard to measure.
Yes.
Yeah, and who decides? And there is criteria, and there are experts that can say, I think, in some instances, hey, this dude is exhibiting classic psychotic behavior,
yes,
and he's going to hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would behoove the authorities to mandate some kind of a drug regimen or something. Now, this
people
is really,
don't know when to say
dicey.
That, though.
Yeah,
like,
it's
you have a guy who hasn't done anything yet, he just seems a little off. You don't know what it is,
right?
It's dicey. It's very, very tricky stuff because now you're talking about a government agency coming in there and making you take drugs.
Yeah.
But in some instances, it might save a lot of lives if you've got a crazy person. And the question becomes, what if that is a viable alternative to having people get shot up in some instances, what do you do about it?
It is a really good question and a really hard one to answer. Because here's another factor. When you do an experiment, the fact that you're doing an experiment has an effect on the results of the experiment itself. A classic one that we've talked about on this podcast before, I think it was Carl Hart that brought this up. It's a brilliant point that I never even considered. They'd always talk about these things that they do with rats. You know, they give rats heroin, and the rats, like, do the heroin every day, and then, you know, they keep doing their tasks. But if you give them cocaine, they just do cocaine until they die. Well, he goes, yeah, but they're in a cage during an experiment. This isn't a normal rat.
Rat cage.
You change the entire experiment.
The drugs.
You can't just, it's not like you're giving them cocaine in the woods. Well, if you did that, you would have, like, much more reasonable results.
Well, do you know what the results were? It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So they laced the water with cocaine and heroin. The rats kept doing it until they died. And then this experimenter came along and said, why don't we change the rat cage? I'll create Rat Disneyland. And the rat, he created a utopia for rats. They had plenty of sex, friends to play with, lots of things to keep themselves occupied. Do you know how many rats kept going back to the cocaine and heroin bottle? None. After a while, from what I was told, the experiment yielded no addiction, and they all started drinking water and went back, and they kind of said, I'm done with that drug thing. So
it
changes things up.
Well, also, okay, let's think about that for a second, because if we're living the way we're living today, it's because people before us have figured out how to build houses and electricity and cars, but how many generations? How many generations in relationship to the DNA that's in our body that supposedly takes like 10,000 plus years to change? Or I mean, how similar are we to people that lived 10,000 years ago? Probably almost exactly, or
yeah,
really,
physiologically,
really, really, really fucking close,
yeah.
Right? Maybe the reason why people are into drugs and constantly trying to alter the state of their consciousness today is directly connected to these rats being willing to do this experiment or being willing to go back to the cocaine until they fucking died in this experiment, as opposed to the way they were in the wild. Like, maybe if we were living in the wild, maybe if we lived the way people lived thousands of years ago as hunter-gatherers, maybe if we did
so.
That, we would have no desire to do coke.
I would agree with you if I didn't know that pygmies in certain parts of the Congo smoke copious amounts of weed.
Yes, they do.
And if people in the Amazon who are hunter-gatherers take all kinds of hallucinogens.
Stop and think about the drugs that you just described.
Mm.
Copious amount of weed, which makes them more sensitive,
mm,
more paranoid, maybe keeps them alive more,
mm,
more community-oriented, more loving, and maybe even more creative.
Mm.
So you're talking about marijuana. If you're talking about the people that live in the indigenous tribes in the Amazon, you're talking about serious psychedelic drugs that are ego-dissolving, that remove the world around you and bond you inexorably as this tribe.
Right.
So you're not talking about heroin. You're not talking about coke. Especially
right.
Not talking about coke.
Right.
Like, how many fucking people They do chew coca leaves in a lot of those environments.
It's different, like, effect.
In Peru. Yeah, yeah. But it's coca leaves.
They chew ghat as well in Ethiopia and places. Ghat is a...
But that's more, isn't that more like a narcotic?
It's a narcotic.
Yeah. But the
keeps you mellow, I think.
Coca leaves apparently is really nice. It's really nice.
Does ghat keep you mellow or does it hype you up?
I think it's a stimulant. I think that stuff is...
Because they chew a shitload of it in the Middle East. I remember it as a kid.
Yeah. I wonder if we went back to living this sort of subsistence life, if any of that stuff would have any pull on us at all.
I don't know. But I do think that the new science of, like, Portugal decriminalized all drugs.
Yeah.
But what they did is a really interesting thing. They think by some measures in 2000, 1% of the population was hooked on heroin, which is incredible, a huge addiction issue. And you have to be careful with these statistics, but this is what I heard on TED.com. And when the government said, I'll tell you what, instead of spending all this money on enforcement and rehab and stuff, we'll take addicts, we'll decriminalize it. And what addicts need is connection. So what we'll do is we'll say, we'll get them in rehab and we'll take care of that. And then we'll get them a job and we'll say to their employer, look, train this guy, we'll pay half their wages. It'll cost you half as much to hire this addict who is going to take your program. We have our own programs. They're managing their addiction. And they've had huge success because what happens to the addict is that they develop connections and they develop purpose and they develop an entire infrastructure of support around them. And that apparently, from what I understand, a lot of like addiction specialists talk about that being very important, man. Connection is a great antidote to your addiction issues. I'm not an addiction specialist, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think one of the big problems with addiction specialists in this country is they're only allowed to use methods outside of drugs. There's there's some people that get some spectacular results in other countries, especially in Mexico with ibogaine, or people that are hooked on pills.
What's ibogaine?
Ibogaine is it's from the iboga plant, and it's a really intensely introspective drug that is it's not a fun time at all. There's very little recreational ibogaine. It's just like really intense view of your life, very, very deep and complex view of your life. And it also shuts off some physical reactions to addiction. Somehow or another rewires the mind in some strange way that's very, very effective. I've had friends that have had pill problems that have gone to these retreats in Mexico and had ibogaine treatment and just completely knocked it out.
How much of it is placebo? Who knows?
No, it's not placebo at all, I don't think, because what we're talking about is an insanely intense introspective experience that's not dissimilar from the DMT trip that you went on in the fact that it dissolves reality.
Right.
It dissolves reality in some sort of strange way. And then I haven't experienced the ibogaine, those trips, but I have quite a few friends have done it, and every one of them said it sucked. Like, they did not like it. Like, it's really harsh, but the results are spectacular. Like, the results, like, when you get through that, you're like, okay, I see it all. It's all mapped out now. Like, what am I doing in my life? Like, what are all these pitfalls that I've set up for myself? What are all these traps that I've, like, left in my personality? What are all these excuse mechanisms that I have just ready to fucking pop off and send me to the bar? What are those things? Well, you see them like they're, like targets. You see them all around you, like really obvious landmines.
It's weird how people have like a lot of those. We all have some of those. But for me, my way of getting out of that is I just ask myself what I really want. And I think that's helpful. Like when I just go, what do I really want to do and we'll get good at? What really interests me?
I think you've never been addicted physically to anything.
No,
nor have I. So I think we're talking out of our ass when it comes to that.
Yeah, I never have. Thank God. I feel lucky that I don't have that. I don't drink much. I never had any of that stuff. So
yeah, that's the pill one and the heroin one. Man, that is a goddamn crazy one. The coke one, I've seen them all, and they're real hard to figure from the outside. I haven't experienced what the ache in their bones.
Well, what about how much people drink in this country and have always? This country has always been a nation of drinkers, man.
And that's why we get gas. Because we don't give a fuck. We get drunk. We make shit happen.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
But it's responsible for a lot of great art, too. You know, that's one thing that people don't want to admit.
It?
Of course. How much fucking great music was created by drunk people?
I don't know. I think a lot of great music was created by people who sat in in rooms and just played music.
Well, that's true, too.
You know but what there's I mean? A fuck they it. Say that what destroyed the Haight-Ashbury movement, that wonderful psychedelic movement, was when musicians went from weed and psychedelics to heroin and cocaine. And the heroin and cocaine was what actually destroyed a lot of great musicians.
Yeah, but that's coke. We're talking about booze.
Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of artists that have used booze, including writers. Historically, there's been a lot of writers that were drunk. Stephen King, when he's in his prime,
King
was
said,
drunk.
In his book, which I read, he said, there are a lot of creative people that have substance abuse problems, he said, but they happen to be very creative people with substance abuse problems. He said they were creative, and then they had a problem, but it's not what made them creative.
That's possible that he's right, but it's also possible that he's saying that because he's not an addict anymore, and he doesn't want to go back to it, and so he's made this sort of connection in his mind that it wasn't the alcohol that allowed him to be so free and creative. It was his own free creativity that he had in his mind, and he had a problem. It is true.
That's true. Or here's another possibility.
There's correlation and causation. They're not clearly defined in this.
No, here's another possibility, too. People that are creative and have great imaginations and allow themselves to have a great imagination may also be, to some degree, maybe a little self-destructive, or at least searching for different states. And so maybe, you know, that the kind of person that's imagined enough to write a book like Cujo also likes putting himself in something other than his sober state.
Totally possible as well. But
we
I think there's also some thoughts that come to you when you're drunk. Like, I've done some drunk writing, especially on airplanes.
God, I'm an idiot when I'm drunk.
Well, I listen to like music and have a couple Budweisers, and I'll write some stuff that I might not write.
Dude, when we were doing the Ice House one time, I was one of the first times. It was in a small room, and I smoked a bunch of weed, and I don't do it, and I got high doing your podcast, and I drank some scotch because you forced me, peer pressure.
I don't think I forced.
And I wrote, and I got up on stage and crushed the room with a whole thing I kind of emphasized about how I saved a whale. Now, I never would have thought about saving a fucking whale without that state. So maybe it did open up some channels. But the late Oliver Sacks said something incredible. Do you know the story about Philip Plagenet? I think it's Jason Plagenet, I think his name is. Furniture salesman, 1994, comes out of a bar, gets savagely beaten, and starts having sort of deep mathematical, geometrical thoughts. And the next thing you know, he starts drawing these geometric relationships and shapes. A physicist walks by one day and goes, "Do you know what you're doing?" And he said, "No, I'm trying to figure out the relationship." And he goes, "You're drawing high math." Long story short, he'd never been interested in math at all, and in 2015, he is considered a math genius. He got beaten. Oliver Sacks did a great thing on a guy named Tony Sciorra. Gets struck by lightning. He's an orthopedic surgeon. The lightning goes through his cheek, comes out his foot. Tony,
I just want to say right now, if you're a shitty musician, don't let someone kick you in the head. Like, dude, I've got it.
Don't do it.
I'm going to be a math genius.
I'm going to kick the shit out of me and let me see what happens.
The most creative people are drunk.
Tony Sciorra.
What is this?
Tony Sciorra.
What is this?
This is an article about the Churchill gene.
The Churchill gene.
Yeah. Oh, well, Churchill always had some. Winston Churchill always had some alcohol in his system. But listen to this. Tony Sciorra, who Oliver Sacks studied, basically gets struck by lightning. All he can hear is piano music and becomes a composer and a high-level composer and a piano player, because all he wanted to do after that was play the piano. And he was never interested in music. So the idea is maybe sometimes certain things that happen to your brain can open pathways and channels and circuitry that was blocked or wasn't activated before. In this case, it was a beating and lightning. But there are examples of something traumatic happening to someone's brain where it opens up an entire new passion and interest in that person. And that's documented by the late Oliver Sacks and a lot of other people. That's kind of fascinating.
Well, I think that the mind is some sort of a device. And this device relies, like the rest of the body, on all the different elements that keep a human being alive. Human neurotransmitters are flowing around. There's neurons firing. There's all these cells that are alive. I mean, the mind is just like this fascinating place. Now, when you introduce things that are psychoactive to the mind, whether it's caffeine, whether it's nootropics, whether it's alcohol, whether it's marijuana, there's an effect. And when that effect happens, there's a cascade of effects. The effect of marijuana, there's a lot of different effects, but one of them is your creativity absolutely gets a kickstart. Something happens. You get a weird way of looking at things. You get a strange, altered perspective on things. Alcohol does the same. It gives you a strange, altered perspective on things. It may, you know, it does it in a douchier way. Makes you a little louder, makes you a little bolder, releases inhibitions. But occasionally, someone will write something while on alcohol that is just brilliant. And it comes out of this don't give a fuck thing that alcohol allows you to look at something from a different angle. It's not.
Or maybe drops your inhibitions and and you're able to be more yourself in some instances.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah, I mean, that's Bukowski, a possibility. Yeah. It's also a possibility that it's a combination of those things, that they're not individual, that there's, you know, there's not an either or, that they're all a part of this, like most things in life.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, it's
maybe it quiets down one part of the brain.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now listen, man, we're learning more and more about science, brain science all the time. It just shows you not to be too orthodox in your thinking and certainly not too judgmental in your thinking.
You know what else, too, that I think is very important and I've monitored in my own life? I don't have a problem with depression, but I do have days where I feel better and days where I don't feel as good. And a lot of that is dictated by how I choose to think. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is dictated by how I manage my life, whether I'm happy with things that I'm doing, and how I choose to pursue my thinking. You know, and I think there's a certain amount of what that is that makes you feel happy and makes you feel sad that is manageable. And I think too, there's definitely a danger in putting it all on a disease and all on a pill. And for some people, it most certainly is a disease. But there are people that have some wiggle room in their life, and they can turn their life into a much more positive experience for themselves if they just choose to manage it correctly. This is not excluding people that have a legit medical condition and have legit medical depression and there's some sort of a chemical imbalance. Not at all. But I'm saying there's a lot of us that aren't depressed like me, that you can manipulate the way your mind feels. You can manipulate the way your view of the earth is.
What you choose to focus on.
Yeah.
You know, that's 100% true. You know, I always think about that. How you manage what you choose to think about and the perspective that you take. My God, anxiety. When behavioral psychologists, we used to always say, you got to get rid of your anxiety. And now what they say is, if you think of anxiety in terms of just your body getting ready for action, as opposed to, oh no, this anxiety is going to kill me, your blood vessels look very differently. So the how you view your own anxiety and the attitude you take, your blood vessels will either constrict, which is not good, but if you look at anxiety as, here I go, my body's getting ready for this, I'm getting ready, your blood vessels and your heart looks exactly the way it does in moments of joy and courage. And that's from a fucking great TED Talk. Again, I can't remember. I wish I could tell so people could watch it. But really interesting how you look, how you choose to think about your own anxiety has everything to do with how whether it's healthy for you or bad for you. And if you choose to think about anxiety in the right way, there's a lot of evidence, measurable evidence, based on a study that followed, I think, 30,000 Americans over 9 years, that suggests that it actually can be good for you.
That makes sense if you think about it, because you're shifting what it is, and what it becomes is energy.
Yes.
And like this, like, oh, I got this anxiety, but you know what? This is a growth moment. This is important. This means we're getting something done. Something is happening.
Yes.
And concentrate on it like that.
You used to say that. You used to always say, I like those moments where I'm not sure what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I do.
Very important. Fucking important.
I like them a little too much.
It's called
though.
Adventure. It's called adventure.
Adventure.
It is.
That's
adventure is not knowing what's going to happen next.
What I like to do is run the podcast out to the last 5 minutes like we're at right now and wonder when the tape's going to run out.
Damn. Why does it last only 3 hours?
It's fucking Ustream. If we were on, if we had the balls to switch over to YouTube or Twitch.
3 hours Twitch is a long time.
It's enough. It seems like a good number. You know, people get mad now when I do two. I did 2 hours yesterday with Ronda Rousey. People were complaining.
They wanted more.
They called me a lazy do-nothing bitch.
Can you Jesus, believe that? Those bastards.
They call me a do-nothing bitch.
I don't really read. I don't read any of my. I don't read any of my comments.
Well, it's dangerous.
I heard a comic friend of mine was talking shit about me and Brennan. I thought it was
who? Say his name. Don't. No, we'll do but it. We'll I talk will about later. It afterwards.
But it was surprising. He's like a young guy I like. And
he might have been misconstrued.
Yeah,
it
might have been.
Who knows? Or he might be a jealous bitch.
He was mad. And
might be sad.
Yeah.
Might not be happy.
I like him. I feel bad.
Might not get no laid. Maybe you misgendered him with the wrong pronoun. Try Zier. Z.
Hey, ladies, gentlemen, and Zers.
Here. You can call them here. They're teaching new pronouns.
September 23rd, come see me and Joe. September 22nd, come see me and Joe at the Ice House. September 23rd, come see me and Joe at the Hong Kong Inn at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. We had an 8 o'clock show just now.
Yeah, but where can they buy the tickets for that? Do we know? We haven't even advertised it.
Yeah, just go to
anywhere.
The Hong Kong Inn. It's Hong Kong Inn, hongkonginn.com.
Yeah, the Ice House tickets are not on sale yet either.
Okay. But hongkonginn.com, you can buy. They'll sell out immediately.
Yeah, and this Friday, I'm at the Ka Theater. If you go into the UFC in Vegas, I'm at the Ka Theater on Friday night with Greg Fitzsimmons and Ian Edwards.
Love both those guys.
Big time fun, you fucks.
I'm at the San Jose Improv September 25th, 26th, 27th.
One of my favorite places ever. That was a beautiful place.
I've only done it once a long time ago.
Theater. It was an old time theater.
Yeah.
And they converted it into a comedy club. It's beautiful.
Wait.
It's one of the best improvs in the
really?
Country. Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome people.
I can't wait
too.
To do it.
All right, you fuckers. Thank you very much, everybody. Much love. Love you all. Big
Peace.
Kiss. Bye bye.
Goes out to